Beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma alongside my co-host, Danny Santarella. We got Tony D behind the glass.
Yeah.
Neil Lynch. Now, we like to tease a lot about like Neil, but he legitimately has a like a comedic showcase tonight. He's even on the same stage as Louis C.K.
Is he?
Yeah.
Louis is one of my favorites.
He is my favorite stand-up comic, bar none.
Can we get rid of Neil and put Louis C.K.
Can we get Louis? I mean, can that be something?
Neil's got connections.
He's just sharing the stage with Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Is that show coming back anytime soon?
It's coming back. It got renewed, yeah, but I don't...
Wow.
It's been a... Yeah, it has no rhyme or reason as to when that show's on. It does not follow any sort of schedule. He'll just come on for 4 episodes and then be gone for a year.
How has Neil not hooked us up with some of these dudes? I mean, he knows some cool people that he talks about.
He opened up for Jim Gaffigan at one of these shows.
I've seen Jim Gaffigan twice.
I've seen Louis C.K. like 10 times. That guy, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I've seen him in Boston. I've seen him in the casino. I've seen him in New York a bunch of times. He's my favorite. I've been following him for 10 years. I love the guy.
Neil's kind of run his course here, hasn't he, by now?
Yeah.
He can't even hold himself.
Do we have a better chance of Bobo landing as Colin Quinn?
Absolutely.
Because they're best friends.
Bobo's the man who gets things done.
Yeah.
We're dealing with Neil Lynch.
With Neil Lynch.
Who's the joke on now?
He couldn't jump ship faster.
No.
If he took off, he'd be like, what?
You blame him?
No, we don't even let him talk.
No, we don't even let him talk. He's got a little delay. We don't let him talk.
But whenever he talks, it's great, and everybody wants to hear more of him. We never listen to him.
And I've never once heard you refer to the town he lives in as Hoboken. Broboken. I mean, we jump on him for everything.
We jump on where he lives.
He goes easy on us, and we just poke fun at him. It's not fair.
He's clearly better at this, whatever it is that we're doing, than us by far.
I'm going to tell you what he's not better at. Writing March Madness articles.
No.
No.
You're killing it.
I was very disappointed in his article, because you know why? He's better than that.
Yeah, was not a Neil Lynch style. He's
no.
usually much better.
He's phenomenal, but that was very Dan Santarella-ish.
This is going to be a very NCAA tournament heavy show.
Yeah, I follow it.
Yeah, it's going to be, you're a little bit into it. This is going to be your time to shine here.
Yeah, it's great.
You ready for that?
I'm without a doubt ready.
I mean, you broke down all the brackets.
Yep.
Right. I think last I saw you broke down 3. You did get to the fourth one.
Right,
I
haven't. Fourth.
So you've broken down all the brackets. So
yep.
We're gonna get to all of that. We got a great guest calling in a little bit. You know, we had asked the fans. We didn't get a great reaction from the question, but you never know what you're gonna get from our fans on Facebook. But like, what are some of the bigger moments in the history of the NCAA tournament? And to me, like, this sticks out. You think of like Leitner's shot. You think of this play, which is obviously the 1983 national championship game there against with NC State against Phi Slamma Jamma. And so we got the guy who put up the most famous air ball in the history of basketball, I think at any level.
Yeah.
And that's Derek Wittenberg, so he'll be calling in a little bit. He's actually assistant coach on the NC State squad. Who's here. They're a 12 seed, I believe.
They are.
Going up against St. Louis.
Yep.
Tomorrow night?
Tomorrow, yeah. They beat Xavier Handley last night
mm-hmm.
and looked good doing it. It's a hot team. I think they've won 10 of the last 12 regular season games.
Yeah.
Mark Gottfried's the head coach. Good team. I think they're in a little bit of trouble against St. Louis, but I'd love to get his take on that game. Slow down team. They like to play up tempo. St. Louis is a little slower.
Yeah.
And Wittenberg, like we were talking about off air, was a very, very good college basketball player. That was a very good team when you look at guys like him, Thurl Bailey, the late Lorenzo Charles.
Yeah.
So
that's
a really cool guy.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of our like casual listeners who are kind of casual basketball fans like me, and they don't know the name.
Yeah.
But then I said, if you look at all the footage of the, you know, obviously they know the shot, but you look at like who Jim Valvano goes to find, and you look at all the pictures of them like walking around the court, and you see Jim Valvano with his arm around him, like you could tell this guy was, if not the heart and soul of the team, one of the core, you know, guys of that.
You know what's great about that? On that great 30 for 30 that ESPN did, Survive in Advance, about that NC State team, the reason Valvano went nuts after that game, running around like a mad person like he did, was his, like, their little, like, good luck thing was, after a big win like that, him and Wittenberg would have, like, a big hug.
And he was looking for him.
So he's running around looking for Derek Wittenberg, who says on that documentary, he's like, I was just busy celebrating, you know? I wasn't worried about any of that.
Yeah.
So that's Valvano looking for him.
Yep.
That's what a key cog he was on that great team.
Yeah. Now, I've caught the tail end of a 30 for 30, and maybe, I don't know if it was an official 30 for 30, but it was a special on the Big East. It was like Requiem for the Big East. Did you catch that one?
Yes, I did.
So I only caught the tail end of it, but I want to, we got a few minutes to kill before Wittenberg comes on, before we get into the tournament and all. I was utterly impressed by the entire Big East tournament.
Yes.
Utterly impressed.
Absolutely.
I mean, not only for the fact that you were just like predicting everything and you said Villanova was a fraud and they were, I thought Providence was going to lose to St. John's. And you have, it's always, I mean, what Providence, and you're going to think I'm like this UConn homer, but the Providence run reminds me of that UConn run from a few years ago, where UConn came in, I think they were like an 8 or 9 yeah. seed, remember? And they, and Kemba Walker
took them. Definitely win 5 games in 5 days.
Yeah, and they, and Kemba Walker just was big shot after big shot. Cotton's that same type of guy. I mean, he's listed at 6'1". There is not a shot that Cotton is 6'1". There's no way. I mean, Aaron Andrews towered over him in the postgame interview.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's like that same kind of thing, like, and which is something I've never seen the selection committee do, but they've came out and said they needed to win that championship game to get in. They were going into the tournament, people were saying they needed to win one game, do they need to win 2 games, whatever. They said if they did not win that game against Creighton, they were not going to get in, which I don't understand how that is because they had a very good season. But they came out right and said it. And, I mean, what's the coach's name?
For Providence, Ed Cooley.
Ed Cooley is a guy you just, I mean, I've heard him do interviews.
Yeah.
You could just tell his players love him.
Yep.
And, you know, he was on the Fan the next day and talking about, you know, he's the one that told that story. Like, you know, they came out and publicly said we weren't going to make it. He goes, so I'm not going to be bitter about it, but I'm going to go up to one of these guys during the tournament and ask him, what did we do wrong? So I don't, if we ever are in a spot where we don't win our conference and we're not at large bid, what could we have done differently? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, which is a valid question because I would have thought that they were in just by their, you know, especially after they won, you know, to get to the finals, I thought it was a foregone conclusion they were in.
Well, I mean, I think when you look at a team like SMU, who was on the top of everybody's list of teams that, most people, they should have been in, but they weren't. They were 23-4-9. But then you look at, you know, and Larry Brown, they're a Hall of Fame coach, great coach. They played the 303rd most difficult out-of-conference schedule. So that's garbage. I mean, that's a schedule where you look at a team like, I know I'm a fan, but Kansas playing the number one, that's 303 spots different.
How many teams are, it's like 350 or something.
350 or 60 or something. So you look at what Providence did in the Big East, which I have said is a better conference than anyone gives it credit for. It's never going to be ever again that Syracuse, Georgetown, UConn, Seton Hall, all those great deals that they had back in those days. BC left years ago. That's a good league.
Very good.
And that is at the tip of the spear for most people like me that can't stand the way the NCAA does things, is you have a team like Providence that you're telling me isn't going to get in unless they beat Creighton. And meanwhile, the head of the NCAA selection committee said, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Wisconsin-Green Bay, which I think Wisconsin-Green Bay should be in. But Providence is better than them, and they play in a much tougher league than they do. So you tell me Ed Cooley's team needed to beat Creighton, which is a very, very good basketball
team. 3 seed, aren't they?
They're a 3 seed.
Yeah.
They needed to beat them to get in. And then, you know what, dude? I'm watching the brackets come out live on Sunday. And because I'm a college basketball crackhead, it gets down to the last 2 spots, and I go just like this. This is Providence and North Carolina. It just hit me. I'm like, those are the only 2 teams they haven't mentioned that are both locks to be in. And I go, they give them an 11 seed against the hot Carolina team. That's their punishment for winning the Big East.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I was with one of our big supporters there, Paco Fabian, who's a Providence grad. He was at the game. I was talking to him on Sunday, and I said, where do you think they'll fit it? Where do you think they'll be seated? He goes, I could see them being an 8-9. And I said, you don't think? I think they've got to be at least a 7. And they were an 11. That's how much I know.
Yeah.
11 was just a joke. But to get back to your point you made about the Big East, you said they'll never be back to where they were. Why not? I mean, not that they're going to be there anytime soon, but would you have thought, I mean, when the Big East was the Big East, really, through the 80s, I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere. Don't you think that this national contract they have signed with Fox Sports 1 helps them with recruiting? That you're going to be like, all right, look, you're going to go to a basketball-centric school. You're going to be gods on this campus. You're not going to some school like Florida where the basketball team is one thing, the football team is another thing. You're going to be a god at this school. You're going to be on national television, 80 million households. You don't think those kind of things could help? And I think I don't see that it's like it could never be big again. Maybe it'll never be like it was in its very much prime, but I could see the Big East in 10 years being up there with the powerhouse conferences.
Yeah, I don't think I was clear on what I meant. I think what people are trying to tell me is the Big East, judging by the way that they seeded some of these teams in the tournament, by, for example, giving a team like Massachusetts a 6 seed with a play-in game, and then you give Providence an 11 seed. I mean, UMass is a 6, and they draw the Iowa-Tennessee winner. That's like double positivity for them. All I'm saying is the Big East, I think it's a great league, and I love everything about this league, the Catholic Nine, whatever the hell they're calling it. It's great. But if you're looking for it to be those old days where John Thompson, Jim Boeheim, Louis Karnisek, Raleigh Massimino, and those guys are coaching, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's not that, but it has a chance to be a very good league. And the NCAA is the reason these things are happening, and now you're going to tell me that you're going to punish a very good basketball league, and all basketball league, really one of the only ones we have. You're going to punish Providence for winning the tournament by giving them an 11
seed against
UNC. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. Well, we do have joining us now on the Tucci Lumber Hotline. Really, you talk about NCAA tournaments, and we mentioned, you touched on it in the beginning of the show. I mean, one of the most iconic plays in the history of all of sports, let alone the NCAA tournament. And a guy who, throughout that whole tournament and in that game, played a huge role in that national championship, and that is former NC State star and current assistant coach for the NC State squad, at Derek Wittenberg. Derek.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Before we get to the obviously the big play, I got to ask you about NC State. You guys, you know, you're rocking and rolling here, getting ready to play tomorrow against St. Louis. You guys got the team fired up or what?
The team is very fired up, and it all starts with, you know, probably our last 2 weeks of the season. We were right there on the edge, didn't know we were going to get in, and our guys was real resilient. We came back and beat a tough Boston College team, went up on the road and beat Pittsburgh, and T.J. Warren has been outstanding. He's had two back-to-back 40-point games. He was player of the year, and then we came back and won two games in the ACC tournament against Miami, and then come back and beat Syracuse. So we're kind of excited right now. And last night we played tremendous in the second half against Xavier. And we got a team that believes they can beat anybody if they continue to play well and play good defense and rebound the basketball.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, we're in UConn country here in Norwalk, Connecticut, and we've seen UConn just a few short years ago get hot at the right time in that Big East tournament and just roll into the NCAA tournament with a ton of confidence. Do you get that sense that the battles you guys have been going through in the last couple weeks to put yourself in the position to make the dance is going to be a beneficial thing for you guys on this run?
Absolutely. And Coach Godfrey has talked about the Connecticut run where they had to win five games essentially to make the NCAA tournament. Then they went on another six-game run. You know, in this tournament, once you get on the road and you gain confidence and you start to win games, you know, you just get more and more confident as you go on. And I think with our team, if we can just get through – it's a tough St. Louis game. You know, we have to get off to a good start. If we get off to a good start and T.J. Warren and Rawson Turner can get their scoring going early, I think we'll have an excellent chance.
Derek, this is Dan. You mentioned St. Louis. This is a, you know, I'm sure you know a heck of a lot more about them than I do, but this is a slow-down team, a very defensive team. I've seen you guys play quite a few times this year. You like to get up and down the court. How do you think about getting those star players or some of the other players going against a team that just wants to play the game real slow?
Well, they remind us a lot of UVA. That's really a half-court team that plays excellent defense. You know, those guys have won 19 in a row. And then they went on a little slide here and lost 4 out of 5 here at the end. But they're very capable. They can shoot the basketball, but they hang their hat on their defense. And they're going to get out and deny and be very physical and be aggressive. And they're going to try to make it a half-court game. In turn, we have to make it a up-and-down game. The way we do that is defend the ball, rebound the basketball, and then run. And we're good at running. We used to start on the defense end and getting some stops and getting out and run. We think that that's what we have to – we got to control the pace of the game, and the only way we can do this with our defense.
Derek, you see it like I do in the sense that nowadays I see a lot of these teams playing slow down. You mentioned Virginia, who's obviously a one seed and a talented team, but do you see the press, the full-court press, especially the zone press, almost dying now, opposed to back when you were playing? That teams like you're
want to – Yeah, absolutely. I think that the way the game is called, I think the game is called a lot more closely. And so guys are starting to play more zones, slow the game down. There's not a lot of teams that pressure. If you look out there, there's more teams that play half court and more than teams that press and play full court. VCU is one of the teams that's still doing it full time. You have Arkansas still – doing some getting out in the full court and pressuring over. But there's a few teams now that are extending the defense, really trying to force the tempo. Now, Duke does it a different way. Duke does it offensively. Duke wants to try to outscore you. North Carolina wants to try to outscore you. You know, so you have a lot of contrast. You have very few teams that want to really score a lot of points, and you got other teams that really want to slow down and really want to make it a half-court game.
Yeah, Derek, you mentioned Duke, North Carolina, obviously Virginia, very good ball club. A lot of people, including myself in a sense, have downplayed the ACC this year just a little bit, just opposed to, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago when it was the dominant league. Do you feel like that league this year was up to par in terms of getting you guys ready for the kind of competition you're going to see in this tournament?
Oh, absolutely. You're talking about Syracuse was maybe 90% of the year they were number one in the country. You had Duke that was consistently up in the top five and top ten. You know, I think our league has had a heck of a year. We got six teams in. I think our team in Pittsburgh was in the top 25. I mean, we've had a really, really outstanding year in terms of a conference. And our conference is only just getting better. So I think playing in the conference is going to prepare us from playing anybody else in the country. And the one thing people are forgetting about, guys, is the Louisville Cardinals. I mean, here's the defending champs. They back-to-back Final Fours. I don't hear nobody talking about the Louisville Cardinals. They're very, very capable. They have the experience. They've been here before. And Louisville is a team that can be very, very dangerous as well.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, obviously, Louisville and their matchup with Manhattan down there in your pod in Orlando. You know, I watch the tournament every year, as millions of people do, and I see so many of these coaching staff scouting the other games. How much of that scouting do you guys do? I mean, what's the kind of thing Coach Godfrey will do in terms of having some of your assistants scouting these other teams in the game ahead of you?
Well, you know, with the technology today and all the people that we have in place with our staff, everybody prepares for the other team. I mean, we're up night and day looking at film. Everybody's got iPads. You look at all stuff. So everybody is going to be well prepared. And you have plenty of time to, you can get these games. I mean, you can get on your iPad. You can watch five or six games. You know, we really set up the scouting report. The Coach Godfrey loves to go over everything that a team does. And, you know, you can't go over exactly everything they do. You want to go over what their tendencies are, what they like to do the most. And we kind of go over those things. And more importantly, you don't want to forget about your team. You don't want to over-scout when you're scouting the other team, and then 90% of your practice is about the other team and not about you, what you're going to do. It all ends up with what you're going to do and how your preparation and how your kids going to play. You got to get your kids mentally ready to play. And I think motivation at this time is just as important as the X's and O's.
Well, speaking of your team, Derek, before we get into your great playing days at NC State, give me just like two or three keys for NC State coming out of this pod and going into the Sweet 16 after this weekend. What are a couple things you guys need to do that will precipitate you guys going through?
It's real simple. We have to really defend better in the second half of the Xavier game. We held under 34%, and that was the key. And you got to rebound the basketball. And when we rebound the basketball and defend the basketball, we will have a chance to succeed. It starts with your defense, and you have to rebound the basketball. And you got to get out and run, score. So our guys have done a good job with that. Coach Godfrey's really emphasized us getting out on the break and making sure that we get great opportunities in early and often.
Derek, this is Mike DePalma again. You know, before the season, we had John Shire on, who's in his first year as assistant coach to Coach K over there at Duke. And we asked him, like, what brought you into coaching after playing? Like, was it something you'd always wanted to do? And, you know, was it difficult to make that transition? And you have kind of a similar path where you got into coaching really early on after your playing career was over. Was that something you always planned to do when your playing career was over? Did you always see yourself as a coach, or was it something that, like, you know, you needed something to do after your playing career, and that's kind of where it led you? Was that something like a career goal you had had?
Well, you know, things in your life change, and I didn't really plan on being a coach, to be honest with you guys. I thought, first of all, I thought I may have a chance at the NBA, and then when I got cut from the Phoenix Suns, I came back and I thought I was going to work for one of the major corporations, either IBM or Xerox. And then Coach Valvano asked me to come back and be a graduate assistant for him. And I did that. And then I went over to play to Europe for a year. I went over in France and played. And then while I was over in France, he said, hey, I want you to come back and help me coach. And I came back with Coach V, and the rest is history. And I got into coaching. I started to like it and develop a passion for it. You know, it's different than playing and coaching. And I think that just a lot of people come out now and say, hey, right from the start. But really, guys, from the start, I didn't expect to be a coach right away. And it was Coach Valvano that really influenced me and pushed me that way. And 30 years later, here I am back at NC State again.
Yeah. So, I mean, now it's 30 years later. Are you still going back to the lessons you learned under Coach Valvano? And is his voice still in the back of your head as you're coaching? Or at this point, has your coaching style developed on your own and you see yourself a lot different style coach than Valvano?
Well, I've learned a tremendous amount from Coach Valvano. He was a very passionate coach. He was great at getting his guys ready to play. He was a very good offensive mind. He was an excellent game coach. He made adjustments. We would play any defense we needed to be successful. We changed the game plan in the middle of the game. Like Ralph Sampson was really killing us down low. He put two guys on him. And he was just a genius in terms of defensively what we need to do to be successful. But, guys, I've been fortunate. And I played for a Hall of Fame coach in high school, Morgan Wooten. And I worked for Joe Harrington, who worked for Lester Gisrell for many years. I worked for Gail Catlett at West Virginia, who was in the West Virginia Hall of Fame. I worked for Bobby Crimmins at Georgia Tech. So I was fortunate to learn from a lot of guys who had a lot of success. And I just took a little bit for each one of those guys. It really added it to my personality and to my concept and the way I wanted to coach. And thankful for those guys and those lessons, I've had some success as a head coach. And now I can lend that experience here with Coach Godfrey and coming back to my school and helping our kids, hopefully one day, that we can get that third national championship here at NC State.
Derek, Stan again. Talk us through a little bit of that run you guys made, because you guys, you run into UVA, you run into Pepperdine, where I've seen the great 30 for 30 there, where there's a little bit of trash talking with yourself involved and with UNLV. Just talk us through a little bit of that run in terms of the belief you guys had. Yourself, Thurl Bailey, the late, great Lorenzo Charles, Terry Gannon. Just talk a little bit about you guys just kind of evolving into this team that no one expected to do anything, and then there you guys are running into Houston in the championship game.
Well, it was just an incredible run by some guys that really bonded together. And if you remember the quote that Coach Valvano used, you know, ordinary people can achieve extraordinary things. And that's what that group, that run meant to NC State and to our team during that time. And it all started, it really started throughout the year, and we were a pretty good team, and then I got hurt, and then Ernie Myers, a lot of guys came in and stepped up, and then I came back. And then we had to, back then, it was 52-team tournament, 48 really, and then it was a two-game play-in. So really it was only 48 teams that really was going to go on in that tournament. So we had to win the ACC tournament to really get in. And we were 17-10. And we had a lot of work to do. So we played Wake Forest. We won a close game there. We played North Carolina. And in the locker room, I'll never forget it, Coach Valvano said, that's when we beat the great North Carolina team, the Dean Smith team. He said, guys, you may be in, but I guarantee you this, if you win the next game, which was going to be against UVA, you're definitely in because it's going to be an automatic bid. So he always kept us on edge. He always kept us prepared. But more importantly, he was the leader. He was the guy that believed in us and thought that we can do this from day one when he stepped on his campus. We beat UVA. We're not that high. See, we think we're going to stay in the East. They ship us out West. Didn't even blink. We go out there and play a great Pepperdine team, beat them in double overtime. Then now, guys, all of a sudden, it just became this mindset that we just, whatever Coach Valvano talked to us about, we just thought we were going to win. We just thought eventually that somehow we're going to end up winning these games. And we did. Close game with UNLV, 28-3, with Jerry Todd Kanan and Sid Green. They were a great basketball team. And we beat them, and we will go on to the Western Regionals Finals. We thought we were going to play UCLA, but Utah upsets UCLA with Rod Foster and his group. And we beat Utah handily in that first semifinals in the Western Regionals. And then now we're facing Ralph Sampson again. Three-time player of the year, great player. No way we can beat him again. We just beat him in the ACC tournament. Upset Virginia again, and now we're playing. We were underdogs, guys, in every game. And then we get to the Final Four and playing against a Georgia team who early had upset North Carolina to get to the Final Four themselves, Terry Fair and his group. And we beat them pretty good. And then now Houston, nobody thought we ever would have a chance to beat them at all. You got two guys on that team that's in the top 50 all time in the history of our game, Akeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler. There's no way in the world we're going to beat these guys. But it was Val Vano from day one who said, this is our moment, this is our time, and guys, all we got to do is control the tempo. And I'm going to tell you what the game plan was, guys, so you'll know in the huddle. We got to get more, we got to stop them from dunking the ball. If we get more dunks than they get, we win the game. And guess what? At the end of that 54-52 victory, we had two dunks, and Houston had one.
Derek, how much do you think the experience you guys had dealing with Ralph Sampson, who, for any of our young listeners out there that don't know him, he's one of the greatest college big men of all time, how much did that help you guys, and obviously Thurl Bailey was a phenomenal player in the interior for you guys, in terms of dealing with Olajuwon, who was a young guy at the time, but obviously had an unbelievable skill set.
Well, for one, the ACC back then was the number one conference in the country, bar none. We played against the number one team that year in the country six times, and the number two team in the country six times. That just happened to be North Carolina, Virginia, flip-flop. So we were used to playing against the best competition in the country. So when we went into the NCAA tournament, we had no fear about any other team. More importantly, we respected other teams, but we had no fear. And we didn't take anything for granted. We were well prepared. And we, like I said, we have played against the best. And so in order for Ralph, the way we respected Ralph Sampson is that, you know what, we're not going to let him get 40 points and just dominate. We're going to put two guys on him, and we're going to let somebody else beat us. And that was Coach Vano's philosophy. Do not let the best player beat you. And that philosophy held up as long as we went during the tournament. People didn't know, even in the final game, we went to a box and won on Michael Young and also put a guy in front of Olajuwon at times. We changed our defenses up to really try to slow them down and make sure, you know, their best offensive players don't beat us at the game.
Well, I mean, it was certainly an outstanding game plan you guys had there. Like I said, I've seen the documentary. I've seen Coach Valvano tell you guys, we're not running, and then you ran with them a little bit. But talk us through a little bit of that last – what? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So just talk us a little bit through that last play there. I'm sure you were passing that ball and not shooting it, right?
Well, let me tell you something, guys. In the huddle, we were all excited, tie score, and we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. We run our traditional five play, which is Thurl goes to the court off a double screen, and I got the right side wide open, and I got a one-on-one opportunity. So that's basically the play we drew up on the board. But what we didn't anticipate, I don't think people knew, when we came out, we inbound the ball. Houston had implemented a 1-3-1 trap. So we just kind of stayed in our places and passed the ball around. The one thing we knew for sure is that we wanted to take the last shot. So as we're passing the ball around, you know, you got to have a clock in your head. And Thurl was the last one to end up with the basketball. And Thurl threw a pass that was very, very dangerous, cross-court pass. It could have got stolen. And luckily that I snagged it with two, and Benny Anderson reached for one, and I secured the basketball. And in one motion, got that ball up at the basket, and I made that wonderful pass to the late Lorenzo Charles in the rest of history.
The greatest alley-oop in the history of basketball, Derek.
Absolutely, guys.
Derek, is there any truth to the story from that documentary that the that Coach Valvano said there that had you given Gannon the ball, he might have had a little bit of an accident there?
Oh, yeah. He would have definitely been a drop right down in his pants. He would have known what to do with the ball. You know, and I Terry, like I said in the film, I didn't even, I wasn't going to pass to you, I didn't even look your way. And that's a true story. And Terry Gannon, I'm not in the game to pass the ball to you. You're in the game to pass the ball to me. But you know what? Our group of guys, to be a part of, and that's what I try to teach these guys. Because this generation now sometimes is, you know, it's the me generation. And what I try to teach these guys, 30 years later, they're still talking about the 1983 team. And it's nothing greater than being a part of something bigger than yourself. And to get all the emails and all the letters and tweets and Facebook, people talking about how they were touched by the film, and more importantly, touched by a group of guys that made a run that nobody thought we could do. And I'm telling you, people in the hospital that were sick, people that was inspired by any way, it's really changed a lot of lives, and that's what makes that run so special, that we really inspired other people to do some great things as well.
Last question, Derek. This is Mike again. You know, in the last couple weeks, we've had some American icons on. As far last week, we had Rudy Rudiger on, and the week before, we had Bobby Plump, who's obviously the real-life Jimmy Chitwood. And what's interesting is we had a high school kid from Connecticut. He's one of the best players in the state on Roy Kane Jr., and he had never even heard of the movie Hoosiers. And we asked Rudy, you know, do people know you? And everybody knows him. But so my question to you is, you're talking about this generation of kids, 18-year-old kids coming into NC State, do they all know about you and the play, or is it something you have to educate them on?
Oh, no. Fortunately for us, the kids do know. But now, here's the scary part, guys. Guys, you know, I took our guys over to a book signing in Raleigh with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and some of my guys said, like, who's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? You know, like, you know, they're just not as students of the game as we were. And let me tell you something that's very scary, guys. A lot of these kids they've never seen Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
A lot of them have seen Michael Jordan in person. And then you know what's coming up next? Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant ain't played in a year. I mean, it's not the fact that they're not in tune to history, but some of the great players, these guys have not seen. They've heard about them, but they haven't seen them. So, you know, our whole history of basketball has changed overnight, and some of the great talents are not playing the game. But I think you got to continue to educate your kids and help them embrace the history. I think when you recruit kids to your school, you really have to do a great job of selling your history of your school, because really what you want them to think about is really setting their own legacy and being a part of their own history before they leave your institution.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, to me, the play and the game was great, but to me, I mean, I was only born in 80, so I've only seen, you know, replays and highlights of it all. But to me, the iconic moment is seeing Coach Valvano running around the court looking for you. And to me, that's just like it shows the bond between a coach and his players. And so, you know, I'm hoping that's something that you're trying to instill, because you see the kind of value that could have with a team. And you know, I'm assuming that you're trying to bring that same type of bond to your current roster now. I mean, is that something you bring up?
Absolutely. I talk to our guys a lot, especially one on one, and they've seen it. They've all seen the film, and more importantly, their parents are, people around them have, and you know, I'm a reminder of the history that we had, and not only that, guys. You know, I've been here in a lot of different capacities. You know, I played here. You know, I graduated from the school. I came back and coached on three different occasions. You know, my wife is from Raleigh. You know, guys, I mean, there's nobody. And my cousin David Thompson, who played at NC State, was one of the reasons why I came here. So there's nobody that has more history about their school than I in this school. And nobody loves this school more than I. And I always try to pass that on to these kids. Now, sometimes they're too young to understand. They're probably going to learn more and more. But I say, guys, it's nothing more special. Number one, putting up a banner before you leave here. You know, you're part of a team and something very special. And then number two, you know, you're graduating here. You'll be a graduate from this your institution. Number three, hopefully you come out a mature and better person. And then with those three things in mind, you will have a wonderful experience at your school.
Well, Derek, we really appreciate your time. And, you know, you got the whole Tri-State area rooting for you guys tomorrow. So go out and beat St. Louis, all right?
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much, the great Derek Wittenberg. I mean, I think they got a shot tomorrow. I think that those runs that they're on right now, I think there's something to that. I don't care what sport you're playing in. It's like the NFL team that wants to rest their starters late in the year, and you see them get knocked out in the first round after a bye or whatever, and you see UConn. I think there's something tangible to that. And I think you get a team like NC State getting hot at the right time, beating some significant teams on their way. St. Louis is a tough team.
Well, I'll tell you this. For any of our listeners out there that are big college hoops fans, this is the late Rick Majerus' team here. I mean, he was a great coach at Utah. He took this job here. Coach Cruz, who used to be the head coach up at West Point, he's now in charge. They're a very disciplined, and I wrote in my article, they take next to zero bad shots. They slow the game down to a crawl. And I told them, Mr. Wittenberg, that I have seen NC State play, and they love to get up and down the floor.
Yeah.
They're a very, very fun team to watch. If they can just get that game, I think, into even just the 70s, it's a game that they will win.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, I don't see St. Louis going far because they have the kid Evans inside, who's a very good big man. But I just think those slow-down styles, they hurt you in March Madness because you take less talented teams and keep them in the game. Because what are you going to beat a team, like 50-10? I mean, they're going to score some points. I never. That's why I don't like Virginia in this tournament. That's why I don't like them. So I think, you know, for Coach Wittenberg, and he knows much better than me, if they can just get that game going up and down the floor, I think they do win.
They got a tough bracket, though.
It's a tough bracket.
That bracket is ridiculous.
But if you watch last night, anybody out there watched, they looked phenomenal against a solid Xavier team. Not a phenomenal Xavier team, but they looked solid. And they got the ball up and down the court, which Xavier likes to do, too, so it was easier for them. But if they just get it up and down, I think they beat St. Louis.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not just because we just had him on and he was a perfectly nice gentleman
and awesome,
a great guy.
A great story.
Yeah, but I just think they can beat them if they just get it going up and down the floor a little bit.
Yeah, I got to check out this documentary. All right, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We'll talk about start breaking down some of these brackets with the Tri-State Sports guys. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, check us out as always, TriStateSportsGuys.com. On Twitter, at Tri-State_Sports, or Facebook, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys. Now, Dan and Neil are both, Dan and Tony. Neil is our resident comedian and future, you know, Hollywood star.
Right.
You guys are music nerds, I would call you. Because
I would
say
music snobs.
Music snobs. Yeah. That's a better thing. It's like the people that drink microbrews exclusively.
Like our buddy from Norway.
Yeah, like our 99 our buddy that great sponsor 99 Bottles.
Yeah.
I want to tell me how great their microbrews are. So I am not at all a music snob. Like, I like music and it's place, you know, I listen to it here and there, and I've got my Pandora, I listen to it at work. So I got to thinking, you had posted a great article a couple weeks ago about like 10, it was a 5 or 10 bands or musicians that you know, really make you think that there's still some hope left in the music industry.
Correct.
And so I said, let me look at my Pandora, and I guess I got a couple like guys who aren't like huge mainstream folks, but maybe you guys make fun of me. So I figured I'd go through just one. I'm going to give you one, but I wanted to see if these were acceptable. Like if this is something that
okay.
you would listen to me.
Should we listen to the whole list first?
No. I don't want to get. So the first four, I'm assuming you're just going to give me a pass. So they go in order as to how you download. So the first one I did is Pearl Jam, Tool. I can't imagine you've got a problem with Tool. Jay-Z, Rage Against the Machine.
Love Rage.
Right? So then that was my thing. And then I started branching out. And this is the first one that I could see people poking fun, but I think this woman is lovely, and that's Miss Alicia Keys. Is it acceptable for a guy to just be rocking out to Alicia Keys on Pandora? Because I love her.
First of all,
my wedding song was Alicia Keys' song.
She's a beautiful girl, and her voice is fantastic.
And she's ridiculously talented,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and she plays the piano. I mean, I'll tell you, and Tony can comment right after this. What I don't like are people like
Does
Celine
she marry
Dion.
A guy named Swizz Beatz?
Right. I don't like people.
I hate him because I don't even know anything he's done.
Right.
But anytime I hear like this is a new Swizz Beatz song, I immediately hate him because it's like that jealousy. I'm like, why isn't Alicia Keys dating Mike Bob?
Absolutely. Well.
Is she seeing me in a wife beater?
What I can't stand is someone like Celine Dion, who's a great voice, but she just gets up there and has just no musical talent.
Yeah.
She's not playing a sax or a piano or something.
Yeah, somebody's handing her a sheet of music, and she's singing it.
Right.
And handing it back to her.
I'm a novice guitar player. I play some things. I cannot figure out the piano whatsoever. So someone like Alicia Keys that can has my heart. Tony?
So, Tony, you give the sign off on Alicia Keys?
Absolutely, 100%. Yep. And just so you know, Swizz Beatz is... You know, about every Rough Rider song that we used to listen to when we were in high school, he's behind all that.
Is that right? He's that old?
Yeah. He's been around for a long time.
I don't know anything about the dude, so he's a producer.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about him. Yeah. I just know his name is Swizz Beatz.
He's
big. Baby, and I can't stand him.
You do?
So he's talented, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You do realize this list is going to be all downhill from here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll just sprinkle some in as we go along.
Yeah,
the show. We don't
that
need
sounds
to.
Good.
My next one, you guys aren't going to make fun of. My next couple, so I think I'm going to be fine.
All right.
You want to talk about some college basketball?
Yeah,
we haven't gotten enough of college basketball. What will you tell me? What bracket do you want to start with? What bracket is the most boring of the four? What would be the one? I mean, they're always interesting.
Yeah, they are interesting to me. I would say we start.
Is there any bracket where there's a clear cut? Because this is one of those tournaments where there's a million different teams that could win. Everybody seems to love Michigan State. Remember, so you think the South is the bracket where...
The South is the clear cut with Florida, I think. Because you have, and I understand, and I quit being a Kansas fan. I've been told that I can't be.
Yeah, well, you've been told by several people.
Yeah,
you
don't know the names.
You didn't play basketball there.
I didn't.
You didn't drop a double-double.
Plus, every time we're on the air, I tell you how phenomenal I was in high school basketball.
Yeah.
But I do think you have an injured Kansas team, a turnover-prone Kansas team as the 2 seed. You have a team that's like Syracuse in the 3 spot that everybody seems to want to just say stinks now.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm so not on that bandwagon. I think Syracuse is such a good team. And anytime you have a 3-prong scoring attack that goes inside and outside, you have a good shot. The 2-3 zone is spectacular. But I do think almost everyone I know of is trending towards Florida. So I would say that's the one bracket. So if you want to start in the South, we could, you know.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the South because.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, there's a couple teams that are always, you know, NCAA tournament darlings, and the BCU is one of them. You know what I mean? They're that team that after they go on a couple runs, they became, you know, like Gonzaga 15 years ago. Everybody all of a sudden was like, but Gonzaga is always this like media darling, and BCU kind of took over that role.
Yep.
You know, so they come in as a 5 seed. Looks like they're going to be matching up with UCLA. I mean, I've got UCLA over VCU. Do you see VCU making another deep run in this bracket that you've admitted that you think Florida? I mean, then if they do get past there and they got to play going to Sweet 16, they got to face
They
got to face Florida. But do you see VCU possibly making one of their little VCU style runs?
I have VCU going to the Sweet 16.
You do? Okay.
Yeah. I first of all, I've said it for I don't know 5 years now. I love Shaka Smart.
Yeah.
I love everything that man does with the basketball team. This system where they have it printed on the back of their warm-ups, Havoc. They are so much fun to watch, akin to that 94, 95, 96 Arkansas teams with Nolan Richardson. They just are in your shorts for 40 minutes, fun to watch. Everybody's big on Stephen A. Austin with a 28-game win streak coming in. There's a reason they're 8.5-point dogs in Vegas, and the reason is because BC is a lot better than them. My upset in this bracket that I've been big on since I saw the brackets come out is Tulsa. And I had a buddy of mine tell me that it's because of Danny Manning being the head coach.
I was going to say the same
and
thing. The only thing I know about Tulsa
it's not
that Danny
Manning
is their coach. I thought you would pick him.
Woodard is an NBA caliber player for Tulsa. They have 3 guys that score. And the thing that people are forgetting now, because UCLA goes in and they beat Arizona and win the Pac-12. Now all of a sudden UCLA is like they were in 71, and that's garbage. Yeah. They're the worst defensive team in this bracket.
Yeah.
By a long
time. It's not a lot like their football team.
Absolutely. They are brutal
defensively.
So to me, even if they get by Tulsa, because that's one thing I'll preface before we get into all this, because I'll get my hate mail or whatever I get. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I really do think Tulsa beats them, because even if UCLA wins, the way that they'll look, and Kyle Anderson is a 6'7", 6'8" point guard. He's a huge star. He's from St. Anthony down in Jersey City, played for Coach Hurley. Even if they get past Tulsa, I think they will turn the ball over 22 or 3 times against VCU.
Yeah.
They're just so silly with the ball at times. And then defensively, they stop no one. Me, you, Tony Neal, and a fifth guy might put up 45, 50 points on UCLA. They just don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I like Steve Alford. I've liked him as a coach for a long time, but they don't care. So that's my upset. The rest of the bracket, really, as I'm sitting here looking at it, I see is pretty much chalk in the first round. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it now, and I know, unless you consider Pitt over Colorado.
Yeah, I don't.
Which I don't. I just like Pitt's defense there, plus Colorado's without Spencer Dinwiddie, who I mentioned in my article. I think they're a 3 or 4 seed with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how good they would have played with him. But other than that, and then to me, like I said, Syracuse, Kansas, trying to kind of stand up to the mighty Gators. The Gators have everything, from Young and Prater inside, Scotty Wilbekin, phenomenal point guard. They're going to have to play such a garbage game somewhere to lose that I just don't see it.
Yeah.
So anybody that wants to call me like a homer, I'm telling you, I think, first of all, I think Syracuse beats Kansas if New Mexico doesn't beat them in the second round. But I love Florida in this bracket. And I don't really see an argument for it unless Syracuse or Kansas gets really hot.
Let me just backtrack a little bit and go off on a little small tangent here about Shaka Smart. It's something, a question I want to ask, and I almost asked Wittenberg this question, but I figured it was a great interview. I didn't want to go off on a crazy, esoteric question here. But let me ask you this, as a guy who follows college basketball more than anyone I know personally. If you were to say what would make up a great college basketball coach, you look like Shaka Smart taking a program like VCU and putting him on the map like he has. What if you were to, if everything was a pie and you were to split it up, what would you rank like the importance of recruiting, the importance of coaching, as in like actually coaching your guys up in practice and in drills and all that, and then in-game management? Like what's the most important, what's the next most important, what's the least important of those three things? Because when you talk about the NBA, it's really all about in-game management.
Right.
Because you're not coaching a lot of these guys. So you always look at guys jumping, like the guy from Butler, who went to Boston. You never know like how these guys are going to translate, because maybe, and same thing with football. So how would you split that pie up? Recruiting, coaching up your team, and implementing your system, and then in-game management.
Well, I think the first thing when you look at a school like VCU is they're not winning recruiting battles against North Carolina.
Well, it could be though being smart and finding the diamond in the rough guys.
But that's why I underplay recruiting in college hoops a little bit before people start saying anything compared to college football. I think it's huge in college football because you need to get yourself 20 good players every year. If you're a college basketball program and you bring in 2 contributors and one guy who may be a little slow out of the gate, you'll be fine. I think in-game, very important. You look at someone like Coach Krzyzewski, who I put on a pedestal with modern coaches. The things he does in-game.
Well, you look at what Wittenberg said about the adjustments that like Valvano made, or that Houston went with a 1-3-1 trap, those type of things in college basketball. So,
I think it's 2 main things, and I would say it's the implementation of your scheme, which is, staying on Coach Smart for a minute, it's teaching this Havoc system. It's a lot like what Coach Tarkanian ran at UNLV with that amoeba defense, which he would spread out to the full court. And he said it was controlled.
My buddy played for them, Chris Heron.
Right. Friend of the show.
Professor, friend of mine,
It's a controlled chaos. But I'll tell you this, and whether I'm an expert or not, I don't know, on basketball strategy, VCU looks crazy, but when you really watch him as someone who's played since he was a little kid, everybody's in the right place.
Yeah.
Everybody is cutting off every possible outlet you have while doubling the ball, which is almost impossible because you're doubling and you have 3 defenders to cover 4, and they seem to do it. I think it's the implementation of what you run, which is my biggest beef with Kansas when I watch them, is it's almost like they don't know what they're doing. And the second thing I think is knowing your players, because you'll see Smart a few years ago when they knocked Kansas out and they went to the Final Four, he had a different kind of team. He had a lot more 3-point shooters. They shot a ton of threes. This year's team slashes, gets to the rim. He's just tinkering with what he does.
Yeah.
So I think it's knowing your players and being able to have your scheme like Coach Boeheim in Syracuse since the 70s.
Yeah, see, Boeheim's got a scheme that everyone knows it.
Right. So
I think that might. Do you think that hurts Boeheim in his recruiting a little bit?
No, I don't.
You know, the 2-3 zone scheme. No. Like, you don't think that that's something that might turn a guy off?
No,
we're going to play this slow down. I'm not going to be able to put up 20 a game type thing.
Derek Coleman, who played for Coach Boeheim,
I know DC's
yeah,
in that.
He said, I signed with Syracuse because I thought I'd be able to catch a breather on defense.
Oh, is that right?
Playing the zone.
It doesn't shock me that DC was looking for a breather.
And he said within the first week of practice, he realized it's more tiring than man-to-man. Because if you watch them, they run it very differently than anything I've ever seen, which is they have their forwards helping out on wing passes, which is something I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And maybe with Coach Chaney at Temple. He was a great coach there. He taught a matchup man-to-man, 2-3 man zone. But I just think that it's Coach Boeheim, you come in, you know what you're going to run. He teaches it better than anyone. That's why Coach K put him on the Olympic team staff, Team USA staff.
Yeah.
He said, I wanted to have somebody that could teach zone better than I could because Coach K doesn't run it.
Yeah.
And when you want to teach zone, just like if you want to teach option football, you might go to Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech. You're going to go to Jim Boeheim, and he's going to show you how it's done. So I think it's knowing your players and having your scheme and knowing how to teach it. I think those are the two most important things because even Duke, foot speed-wise, they're never like most other teams. They're never like Carolina since the days of Vince Carter and Anton Jameson and those guys. They're slower than them, but they beat the hell out of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they compete with them because their system is a man for a place and every place for a man. And it's just, it's great to watch.
You become bigger than you are.
I really think.
So you would, so as I'm listening to you, you would place it as you're implementing your scheme and the coaching being the most important, in-game coaching second, and then recruiting third is how I'm kind of hearing it.
In college hoops, but you know what it is, and I'm not trying to waffle here. I could see the argument for someone saying recruiting because someone could say that about Coach Calipari.
Yeah.
He's not a great in-game manager.
Well, yeah, you saw him when he got to the NBA.
You know what I mean? And the way he managed the last 3 minutes in the 08 championship game when he was at Memphis against Kansas is the only reason Bill Self has a national championship.
Yeah.
Any other coach, like Boeheim, Krzyzewski, Calhoun, they beat Kansas in that game. So Calipari's not a great in-game guy. He's a great recruiter. And what he does is teach his system to his kids, to my point, I think.
Yeah.
He teaches all these guys, whether it's Julius Randle or it's Davis or it's, you know, Kid Gilchrist, whatever it is. He gets these kids, brings them in, and goes, here's where you go, here's where you cut to, here's the way we screen, and they do it well.
Yeah.
And they do it really well at Kentucky now, too.
I think that's the kind of juxtaposition against college football in that you look at a guy like Saban. To me, he's 90% about recruiting. Because you look at the big games that guy's lost. I mean, we put this guy up on a pedestal like he's Bear Bryant. But he's not a great big game. I mean, he's lost a lot of bowl games, those national championship games that he's favored in. He's lost a lot of games that he's favored in, which means he's got the most talent. I think you look at he didn't have a ton of success in the NFL. You look at him, he's able to be and still win national championships by being the best recruiter there is. But I think you could look at his in-game coaching and have a lot of things to pick, you know, a lot of bones to pick with him.
I've heard that argument, and I would go back to a couple years ago when they shut out LSU in the championship game. That was an LSU offense that had put up points.
Yeah, yeah.
And
they've shut them twice because even the game they lost earlier.
9-7
it was,
or something like that.
10-9, I think, or something like that, yeah.
But I'm not on the Saban train where I kill him for that stuff.
I'm not killing him.
No, I know.
He's clearly his biggest strength.
But I completely discount his time in the NFL because I think it's such a different game.
Yeah.
But I don't even go like Steve Spurrier's not a good college coach because he stunk with the Redskins. I mean, I don't even
they're
apples and oranges. But I did say I think college football recruiting is far more important than basketball because you know,
get a bunch of big hogs up front, a bunch of five-star recruits on the line. You're going to win 8-9 games with anybody behind you, with any system.
And if you misrecruit, let's say, 2 skill players, but you do have that good line or you have a good quarterback or a good defense.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Alabama does. Every one of their linemen gets drafted.
Right.
Every starting lineman for Alabama gets drafted.
Right. Whereas in college basketball, you miss on 1 or 2 recruits, it can cripple a program.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it happened at St. John's with Coach Jarvis as well as things he did off the court with recruiting violations. But he missed on a couple kids.
Yeah.
That he thought were Big East caliber players that weren't, and the program is just getting their feet back on them. I mean, that's how much 1 or 2 missed recruits can kill a college basketball program.
Yeah. No, I didn't mean to take you away from doing the break, but I just something that I wanted to ask you one of these shows about this because I know you would kind of break it down. I didn't really see it going that way, to be honest with you, so it was educational for me because I didn't see you. I thought the recruiting was going to be a bigger thing. I definitely didn't see it coming in third, and I thought the in-game thing – would have been the third most important thing. But I clearly am wrong, because you even listen to Wittenberg and he's talking about the things that they did and how important that is. But again, I'm a guy who's never played organized basketball, so
right.
I don't know.
You know what I would argue is put Coach Krzyzewski or Coach Calhoun in Lawrence, Kansas since 1990 when Roy Williams got there. They have one national championship. They've been in four, five, six Final Fours, whatever the hell it comes to. I think Coach Krzyzewski probably wins three or
okay.
four. And I think Coach Calhoun, who people some reason don't give him any credit.
They don't give him any credit.
He's got three national championships. He's got one less than Mike Krzyzewski, and people
yeah.
go like, Jim Calhoun, who the hell is he?
Yeah, it took a team. And yeah. yeah, right, he took UConn.
Yeah, who's Kevin Ollie replacing? A nobody. Like, you know, he's replacing a legend.
To tell you what UConn, I don't mean to interrupt you. I played college baseball with a kid, Josh Camp, whose father in the, I guess, probably like mid, early to mid-70s played basketball at UConn. He was a hybrid 4'5", 6'5", 6'6", max, and played, like got significant playing time at UConn. So he's like, my dad played at UConn, you think it's like this big thing, but that's what UConn was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That's what UConn
Absolutely.
Was.
But I think that's what it comes down to is put one of these legendary coaches in Kansas, okay? Put them someplace like UCLA where Ben Howland made a couple back-to-back Final Fours and didn't win anything. That goes to the implementation of your system, your in-game adjustments that you make. Those guys do it better than Bill Self, Ben Howland, Jamie Dixon at Pitt, Mike Jarvis at St.
Yeah.
John's, whatever second, third-tier coaches you want to talk about. Coach K does more with players that aren't as good as some of the other teams in the ACC have. And people have argued that with me, and I said, he's never had better, more talented players than UNC.
Yeah.
For years there, when Joe Smith and Steve Francis were at Maryland and stuff like that, Maryland had better players
yeah.
than them. Okay, so Bobby Crimmins had better players at Tech, at Georgia Tech. So Mike Krzyzewski does it with guys that are great, but they're not these uber. Like, you look at, like, Elton Brand and Corey Maggette and those guys, and you go, well, maybe they're not Vince Carter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At in college. So I do think, you know, you need to get the talent, but Coach K does more with guys that you go, geez. If he came to Kansas, I wouldn't even be excited.
Yeah.
Other than, like, Jabari Parker, who's
yeah,
just silly.
Sick. Yeah,
yeah,
or, like, Kyrie Irving,
yeah.
who didn't even hardly play for him. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's like, you know, Popovich always says, before they get anybody, they say, is he a Spur?
Yeah.
I think you look at guys like Krzyzewski, the first thing he says is he a Duke? Is
yeah.
he a Blue Devil? You know, I think Shaka Smart's the same type of thing. Like, they're not going to go out and ever get Jabari Parker or Wiggins or somebody like that. But then they look at those next guys and they say, is this guy, whatever, what is VCU? What is their name?
The Rams.
The Rams?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
That's not a true story.
That is a true story.
That's a very uneventful name for something like...
It's a cool logo, though.
It's black, actually, now that I'm thinking of the logo...
Black logo with like a tan Ram head.
Yeah,
it's pretty
right,
cool.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get down to some more college basketball talk. If you do want to join us at any point during the show, number is always 347-637-2306. With the Tri-State Sports Guys, we'll come back. We'll break down the rest of the brackets, the NCAA tournament.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
Fourth and inches.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, Mike and Dan and Tony. All right, I'm going to go down. I'm going to revisit my Pandora list here for you
yeah.
guys. All right, the next one, I'm going to assume that I'm going to get a pass in this one because he's a guy who never really sold out. The first time I saw him, they opened up for Pearl Jam. Ben Harper, you know, can't have a
yeah,
problem with Ben
no,
Harper, right?
I don't mind him.
Saw him. He plays a guitar on his lap.
Yes, he does.
I saw him in 98. He was the first Pearl Jam concert I ever went to. He opened for him. I've been in love with him ever since. Never really sold out. Like, you know, could be a star. He's the one who discovered Jack Johnson, but, like, let Jack Johnson be this huge superstar. The next two, you're not going to have a problem with. It's Biggie and then Wu-Tang. I can't imagine you have a
nope.
problem with that.
Nope.
Now, the next one, Mm-hmm. Here's why I think you're going to make fun of me.
Yeah.
Because I tried to find a station that would give me a specific song.
Yeah.
Which never works on Pandora. Have you ever tried to do Pandora? So this is how much I like Alicia Keys. This is why I think it'd be. I went Alicia Keys again. I don't remember doing this, but now I'm looking at it.
Right.
And this was, I tried to find, you know that song Diary?
Yes.
Featuring Tony. So I have a station that just says Diary featuring Tony. Is that slightly embarrassing that I went that deep into Alicia Keys where I just want, like, on a rotation at some point, a little bit of Tony in my ear?
Oh, it's
Tony, dude. It's awful. Is that unacceptable? Have you ever done that? You a Pandora guy?
No, but I wouldn't use the word unacceptable. I would say I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for you.
And I haven't deleted it because one of these days I'm going to have a shuffle. And that's, I love that song. It never comes up, dude.
You have this kind of like aura that you're like this cool dude and you carry it well. Then you mention something like this, and I'm just completely embarrassed for you.
Romantic. My wife will tell you I'm a huge romantic.
Yeah, believe it. But that's, no, I'm not going to kill you for that, but that I would be embarrassed.
If all of a sudden something happens to just turn on my Pandora, and it comes up, and they're like, because all you're going to see is Tony.
Yeah.
But it's Diary, and then in parentheses, Tony.
Yeah.
You just grab the phone. Let me see that real quick.
No. My daughter plays with this thing. Apparently she knows how to spell Tony three different ways. Tony, do you have any of those on your thing where it's like you're trying to find a specific? I have more, and it's going to get way more embarrassing.
Yeah, I have a couple on there. I'd have to pull it up.
But
yeah.
You try to do it. It never works, though.
No, never. It never works.
I've never heard that song on my Pandora in 3 years.
There's a reason for that.
My Pandora's telling me, Mike, stop.
Do not.
We will let you know. It's probably not even like in the catalog.
They give them extra skips.
They let me get more than 6 in an hour. All right, what's the next bracket you want to go to?
I want to go to the East because I want to get into my favorite team, Providence.
Oh, my God, you love the Friars. My God, I mean,
UConn's in it, too.
We dedicated, you know I love UConn.
I know.
Wait till you see where I have UConn.
Do you want to just talk about Shabazz Napier for the next 10 minutes?
I will tell you about Shabazz Napier because if you remember, he was very young during their run, and he was so frustrating to watch as a freshman. Because you would watch him, and at times you're like, this is, you know, they've always had strong point guard play. And you'd watch him, and he would just go into his, like, Raymond Felton, like, I'm just going to turn the ball over 5 times in 2 minutes.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? And I never believed in him. Like, I swung and missed on Andre Drummond, too. I didn't think that guy would be a good pro, and he just double-doubles every game.
Yeah.
But I watch him, and I'm like, this guy's never going to turn into a real point guard because he doesn't have a feel for being a point guard. But this guy, I mean, people are talking about being, like, far and away the best point guard. I don't know if he's in that thing,
yeah.
And I'd like to give you that. But he is a legitimate, like, you know, top 3-4 point guard in the nation.
There's no question about that. I mean, I've written, you know, I'm kidding with you here, but I've written about Bryce Cotton because I think Bryce Cotton from Providence College belongs in that discussion.
Yeah.
I hate those discussions about this kid's cemented better than this guy, unless you're talking about like LeBron James versus like Bruce Bowen or something. You know what I mean? But
annoying are that guy's bow ties. And he wears those bow ties. Because his name's got bow in it.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's so unique. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just hate Bruce Bowen. But keep going.
Right, does it?
Yeah. Bruce Bowen. That's why I wear a bow tie.
But what happens around here, and I guess everywhere else in your area, is we're in Connecticut, so Shabazz Napier is, you know, thrust upon us as he's got to be the best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas
Chaz
Williams up at UMass is excellent. For anybody that hasn't seen him, he really is an excellent player.
But I don't see that it's a regional thing. I hear people on ESPN talking about how great...
But they're in Bristol.
You think that's really the reason why?
Well, here's the thing. Joseph Young out at Oregon...
Bristol's a miserable place. It's easy to just hate Connecticut if you live in Bristol. You just hate Connecticut.
Joseph Young out at Oregon, okay, for example, strikes me as the same exact kind of skill set as Shabazz Napier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm, you know, not a social guy, so I'm up watching the Pac-12 network, watching Oregon games, and I wonder who else is. And then as a Kansas fan, seeing Iowa State 3,000 times a year, DeAndre Kane, who's a Marshall transfer, who graduated early and was able to, you know, go to Ames and play for the Cyclones, is spectacular, and he's bigger than Napier.
Yeah, Napier's a...
He's like 6'4", 210.
Yeah, Napier's real
wiry. Yeah, he's slight, and he's just as quick, just as unbelievable. I'm taking nothing away from Napier.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is he's got a great backcourt partner in Boatwright.
Yeah.
Daniels is playing like a lunatic inside. He's just turning in. Every time I see him play, he gets better and better,
yeah,
literally. But I think there is a wide-ranging discussion of talented point guards. You have Harris and Appling at Michigan State that are both excellent ball players.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would make a list of maybe 10 and say these are all the guys. And you know what? I'd write an article about it, but it would just be so rote because it would be like this guy's athletic and smart and talented, which Napier is. But I do. I think he's worthy of being in that discussion, but so is Cotton.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
You know?
Cotton sold himself to me, even though he had a couple tough games early on in that Big East tournament. You know, when they opened up that second half and he scored 10 straight buckets, you know, 10 straight points, and you watch him and it's like this guy has just got the heart of a lion. But let me ask you this as a more general question. When you're looking at teams that you think can make deep runs, and not teams that are crazy, like you said, Florida, is just, they're a very well-balanced team and they could just run through their bracket. When you look at teams, you know, to me, I always kind of shy away from the shooting teams because I'm like, that could just go away in a minute and then they're gone. But would you like a big interior? Like, you remember, like, DeJuan Blair at Pitt. If you look at him, like, this guy's going to carry Pitt because at the time, even though he wasn't a big guy, he just couldn't be stopped. He looked like he was 35 years old. He's had, like, a manly body to him, you know what I mean? Or do you look at a strong point guard who's going to be like, even if he's not shooting the ball well, he's going to get the ball in the right hand to carry a team? So what scares you? Does a shooting team scare you? Or does the team that can't play defense scare you? What is the style team that you think can make a run?
Well, the team I look for when I'm filling out my brackets is a team that is multifaceted in terms of being able to score inside and out. That's the first thing I want to see. That's why I have UConn going to the Sweet 16, is because I think with the emergence of Daniels, with how good Napier and Boatwright and Giffey's playing well, and you have all these different weapons, they can get you inside, and then if you want to double the post, they can kick it out. The other thing I like, which is why I don't like Villanova, I don't like Virginia, I don't like Wisconsin, is I don't like teams that need the game to be at a certain speed.
Yeah.
The minute you need the game to be at a certain speed, either way, like some of those, remember those Loyola Marymount teams with like Bo Gathers and Hank Gathers and Bo Kimble? They needed to score 120 points to win, and they got in the tournament. I think it was Michigan that kept the game in the 60s, and they beat them by 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Who's the team last year that liked to keep real low-scoring games and lost the game? A foul was Indiana, wasn't it?
No, Indiana runs.
Yeah, maybe. Keep going.
I want to see a team, like when I looked at it, we're looking at the East bracket now. The reason I like UConn is because they can score 65 and win.
Mm-hmm.
They can score 80 and win. They're willing to make those adjustments either way. Like, hey, you know what? The game's going up and down. The hell with it. Let's just go up and down. Michigan State, now that they're healthy, now that they've got, you know, Payne's healthy, Valentine's healthy, you have Harris and Appling, which are, to me, one of my favorite backcourts because how tough the two of them are. And Michigan State under Tom Izzo, who's got a national championship, they'll score 80 and they'll score 60.
Well, see, Michigan State's a team I always love in tournament time because he seems to, no matter what, like you said, he's a guy, in-game coach, that could do it.
He's excellent.
Can we give some credit to Kevin Ollie? I mean, we joked with Tariq Turner when he first came on about the job that Kevin Ollie's done, and I've done some tweeting about him. But, I mean, you look at taking over for a legend. Like, it's just a legend that put a team. I mean, whoever takes over for Krzyzewski, to be the same type of way. Not only did that, had to deal with some sanctions. And then to be able to put him in a spot where, I mean, they're not an elite UConn team like we've seen. But they're a legitimate, like you said, like, I got him even going to the Elite Eight. I've got him going, and like you've got him in the Sweet 16. I mean, this is now a team that's in that conversation as a team that can make a run that quickly, and a guy who's never coached before. Kevin Ollie can't be much older than us.
Right.
I don't ever hear him being talked about. I mean, clearly he's not Coach of the Year, but I mean, he should be getting just praised on the national stage from here to from wherever. And I don't think he gets that. You know, nobody talks about Kevin Ollie.
No, I mean, you look at the fact that. Look at the credit Boeheim gets. Look at the credit. I mean, they were mentioned in 2 years ago when Kansas made the finals that if Kansas could just win, Self would be in the Hall of Fame. That would be his second national championship. Here's Calhoun running around with three. He just has three. I mean, he just runs around. I won three national titles. And one of them, by the way, we won.
I've always got spit in the side of my mouth.
Yeah.
Got a wicked accent.
One of them, we had to win five straight games at the Garden and then six in the tournament. Like, just kidding around. And Kemba Walker just played out of his mind. And
5'9" or whatever. Yeah.
So when you watch a Duke game and you see, Collins left the Northwestern job. So there's Wojciechowski. Dawkins took the job at Stanford a couple years ago. So Wojciechowski kind of seems to be the coach in waiting. And you go, the minute Coach K steps down, the spotlight on that Durham school is going to be so bright, it's going to be blinding.
It's going to be insane. insane.
But I think what happened at UConn was because of all the turmoil going on when Calhoun stepped down, all the health
concerns
he had.
There was not a lot of expectations.
There were no expectations. And I think there was almost a feeling that I got at the time of, well, good riddance, because he ran a filthy program. When the fact of the matter is, they all do.
He texted too many times.
Yeah, I mean, who gives a crap about that?
This guy was not giving duffel bags of money. It's not blue chips here.
Right. But I want to know, who else who's alive has three national championships that he's running around with?
Yeah.
I mean, Coach Wooden's gone. Coach Rupp is gone.
Yeah, there's not,
Allen's
not
gone.
A lot of them.
I mean,
yeah.
These guys are gone. So you have Coach K and Coach Calhoun.
Yeah.
And I think because Coach K seems like the more business-like
guy. He's a nerd.
Yeah, he is. He's a West Point kind of nerdy guy. But the job Ollie's doing, I mean, it's unprecedented.
It really is.
Because there's no other situation you could step into other than just a program with a tremendous amount of pressure like Kentucky or North Carolina or whatever.
Yeah, that are perennial like pressure.
Right.
But this is like taking over a guy who was UConn.
Right.
I mean, was UConn.
He built the school, the basketball program, at a school that was like a farm school
in the middle
of nowhere.
Yeah, they're not pulling kids out of Simsbury and Bloomfield, Connecticut.
No.
They got to go all around and say, you got to come up to Storrs, Connecticut to play here.
In Gamble Pavilion, which no one gave two craps about.
That's what I'm saying.
That.
Like, it's an insane story that UConn, and I don't want to sound like a big UConn homer, but it's an insane story that they got to where they were, and then that Calhoun retires, they have all this turmoil, and somehow, just like under the radar, Kevin Ollie's put together a team that, to me, can make a deep run in the NCAA tournament really, you know, just right away.
Yeah.
Just hit the ground running. Like, oh, we have Kevin Ollie, who was a very good point guard in the early 90s. And we just hand it over to him. It's not like they had to go out and spend a million.
Right.
You know, they had to go out and bring in Bobby Knight or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't have to go in and just throw money at, like, let's get some crazy guy.
Yeah.
Get Phil Jackson to come coach UConn.
No, and you know
what? He's got Kevin Ollie, nobody knew that he was going to be a coach 3 years ago.
No, and I mean, to top it all off, you have a guy who played there. You have a guy with an NBA pedigree.
And he was there right when they...
Yeah,
he was one of the important guys. You know, after Tate, like, Tate George, he comes in as, like, the guy who really, like, bridged the gap to...
Yeah.
You know, Tate George kind of put them on the map, in my opinion, like, that team, and then Kevin Ollie comes in, and it's, like, it's really cool to like UConn.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, you look at a guy like Fred Hoiberg at Iowa State. Good NBA career, solid player. Kevin Ollie, same thing. Okay, they're both at their alma mater, and when you see the recruiting classes that are coming into Ames, they're not world beaters, but you're going, how the hell did you get that kid?
Yeah.
And I think there is such a weight that comes with that ability of bringing a kid in and going, hi, I'm Fred Hoiberg, I played 12 years in the NBA, and I can get you there. I think Kevin Ollie has that same thing in an area that's good to recruit, because you can get into the city, you can get into Boston, you can get into Philly, you can go down to D.C. and get kids, and they have, over the years... Boom, wasn't he from California or something? Minnesota or something?
Yeah.
They go all over the
Minnesota,
map and get these
Wisconsin
kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's at a school where he can recruit nationwide, and he has that NBA background, and you look at the
and
job.
They go internationally, UConn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You look at the job he's done. You mentioned it. With Napier, there's a former point guard bringing a point guard along.
The
it just makes sense.
The progression of Napier doesn't get credit either.
No.
Because anybody that says, I mean, I know he came in as like a highly touted recruit, but anybody that watched him early on in his freshman year and thought that he would become the point guard that he is now, the well-rounded point guard he is now, is lying to himself. Lying to you.
I agree with you.
Because I didn't see that coming.
No, and you know what? To talk about the bracket, I think they hit the jackpot. Because I think St. Joe's is just terrifically beatable. You know what I mean? You look at
the best line.
Galloway is a good guard.
Terrifically beatable.
But I think
I'm gonna get T-shirts made.
But I think
St. Joe's is terrifically beatable.
I think you take a kid like Boatwright, who's a very good defender.
Yeah.
Put him on Galloway. You take that strain off of Napier. I think they beat St. Joe's handily. I don't know what the hell the spread is, but I think they beat him handily. And then, as I've been saying, I'm not a fan of Nova.
Don't sugarcoat it. You're not enough fan of him. You hate Villanova. But I do, too. They always, because I was always a guy that was like, I'm going to take my Big East teams in the tournament.
Yeah.
And I get burned in my bracket pool all the time. And Villanova was the one that would always be like, how the hell did you not make it to this next weekend?
Yeah.
It's always Villanova.
Yeah, I actually think, and again, I wrote in my article that Milwaukee did us a disservice by beating Green Bay in the Horizon League Championship, because Green Bay is 26-4, whatever the hell they are. They're really good. But I think this Milwaukee team, I saw the game they played against Green Bay, they can hold their own there, because Villanova just...
Can I quiz you? What's the Milwaukee's mascot? No way you know.
Oh, God, I know this.
No way you know. Because you have, like, I know you know, like, you're, you know, Akron Zips and all that. Can you give me the Milwaukee mascot? Is it beer related?
I don't think so. It's not coming to me.
All right. Well, I didn't want to. I just figured I'd put you on the spot.
Panthers, I think.
No.
I'm looking at the little logo here. I think it's a panther of some kind.
It's some sort of panther.
The Panthers.
Yeah.
Hey. But no, in that
particular... weak... I mean, that's just like...
You're in Milwaukee. You don't have Panthers.
And if you just
Shut
can't
up.
Think of a name, you just go Panthers.
Yeah, let's just be the Panthers.
The Panthers? I don't
yeah.
know.
Let's just be the Demon Deacons.
Yeah.
You know? No, I do. I love UConn to come out of that pod. I really do. I think it couldn't have set up better for them in terms of they have some good size in the front line. So does St. Joe's, but St. Joe's is not really an athletic team that you would see. There's not too many athletic teams that come out of the A-10 anyway. Then I love the matchup. I don't think they could have drawn a better two seed. In fact, I think Kansas without Embiid would be a tougher matchup for them than Villanova is. That's,
yeah.
And I know Villanova beat Kansas down
yeah.
in the Bahamas or Atlantis or whatever it was around Thanksgiving. I absolutely think UConn is a lock.
Just put whatever you want on, Tony.
Yeah, just put the radio on. I mean, you want to go over Tony's man
though? Oh, boy. So the other couple questions, I mean, teams that are kind of, we talked about VCU
yep.
as a team that likes to go deep. Harvard, any chance of a 12-seed upset there?
I don't like it. I mean, everybody...
People do like them, though.
Everybody
they
loves
like
them.
The cute little...
I got news for you. If they didn't beat New Mexico last year, people would be going, oh, that's cute. They're back.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter. But
now
because
all
they
of a
beat
sudden,
New Mexico,
yeah.
who cares? I like Cincinnati.
So you like them. That's
in that game. Because
yeah.
Sean Kilpatrick's really, really good. They play great defense. And I don't think, frankly, if Kilpatrick doesn't score 30, I'd be stunned. Because
yeah.
they don't have anyone that can guard him.
Yeah.
They're athletic, I heard on ESPN, because they're an Ivy League team. So they're athletic for an Ivy League team,
yeah.
which means nothing when you're talking about playing
right.
the Cincinnati Bearcats.
Johns Hopkins
so.
is very athletic, too, apparently.
Yeah, I mean,
the Centennial team.
There's really, I'm looking now, I've got Providence over Carolina.
That's, I do, too. Yeah, so that was the next question I had. I mean, everybody's up here in the Northeast,
yeah.
and on the eastern side of Connecticut is like, oh, we got the worst draw in the world, we're 11
yeah.
seed. I mean, to me, I've seen Carolina on TV a few. I don't think this is a Carolina team, other than the fact that they're Carolina. This
well,
is a Carolina team that's that scary.
Well, what you have is Cotton matched up with Page, a couple great point guards. You've got James Michael McAdoo on the inside, who Henton or Best could cover for Providence. I like Providence all the way, not just being a homer because I wrote about them. I do like them. And going over to the one seed, if you want to talk about, because I really have chalk mainly through it, other than with the exception of Providence in the first round. I absolutely love Memphis over GW.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely athletic. Josh Pastor is another guy. He rode the bench for 4 years for Lute Olson in Arizona. He was coaching under Calipari. He's done nothing but keep up the brilliance of that program since Calipari left. He gets zero credit. I love them to beat GW in a high scoring game, and I love them to beat Virginia.
Is that right?
I love them beating Virginia because they have matchups for every single spot where Virginia is effective, and Memphis is a team that does not play games in the 50s. They just don't play games in the 50s. They play games in the high 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And I think Virginia is a team where in the ACC, they struggled some with North Carolina. Okay? Now,
yeah.
I think Memphis is way more athletic than North Carolina is. So I think that is the upset that I have. And then at the end of the day, as Tony D and I were talking about before we came on the air, we both like Michigan State.
Yeah,
I think it's a bracket that they had to punish them somewhat for the injuries and some of the losses that
yeah.
they had. And Tom Izzo was interviewed today, and I saw it. He said, you know, we lost
those
a lot
guys,
of games.
All those guys are back, though, right?
They're all back.
Yeah.
But I think Izzo said 8 losses was a ton today. Now, that's not true. But I think the way this bracket's designed, when you look at Villanova, Iowa State, who I think is an Elite Eight team, and you look at Virginia – the whole bracket is designed for Michigan State to come out of it.
Yeah.
It's like saying they should be a one seed. They have the talent of a one seed. So let's put two of the weakest teams ever assembled in the
yeah,
top
yeah.
two lines in their bracket. And I love Iowa State on the other side to get through the Elite Eight because I think George Niang is the X factor. He's 6'9". He handles. He brings the ball off the court. He passes. He shoots threes. You can't guard him with a center. I love that team. They're trending in all the right directions. Big 12 champs. So I like them, Michigan State from the two sides, Michigan State Final Four. Who do you have? I want to know now.
You want to know my Final Four?
No.
Quick? I want to bring up a quick, and I mean, I don't like, there's a lot of sports talk shows in New York I don't like. They
yeah.
talk about Francis a lot. The one that I never, ever listen to is Mike Lupica.
Okay.
I can't stand Mike Lupica. I happened to just catch the tail end of it because I was waiting for his show to end, and I was in the car today around lunchtime. He does like an hour show. And a caller called in like right before the end of the show, and he came up with an idea, clearly never, ever, ever going to happen, but just as a straight, like, this makes sense, this is what they should do. He was talking about the problems with these brackets and how they're broken down, and, you know, I was complaining about Providence having an 11 seed or Michigan State having a 4 seed. His idea was, let the selection committee come up with the teams that are in it, the 68 teams, turn it over to Vegas. Let Vegas, who knows more than anybody on this stupid selection committee, I mean, how great would that be? As a guy, I mean, they know more than anybody about what this is, what they do for a living. Turn it over to, or why don't they just hire these guys out and be like, we're going to hire you. They don't have to be Vegas. Just hire the best bookmakers, you know, in the world. Ace Rothstein, come out here and just break it down and be like, realistically, where it is. I mean, it would never happen. Would that take anything away from it for you? Like, is part of the allure of the bracket pools and all this stuff, the crazy, like, this guy shouldn't be this seed? I mean, if Vegas did it and did it with how they see things, it would kind of eliminate some of that. As a guy who loves college wrestling, would that kind of take away a little bit for you?
I think it would. I mean, I think part of the fun is, like I was saying to you, like, waiting for the last two seeds to come out and going, that's Providence and Carolina, because I just know that they're going to be in. Now, if you take a situation where you give it to Vegas and they start switching around, wouldn't be a huge fan of that. I'll tell you what I saw kind of on the same wavelength that you're talking about. Fox Sports 1 did a great deal where somebody in Vegas put together what the 68-team field would look like if they got rid of the small conferences. And you would literally have games like first-round games, Florida and Georgetown. You would have teams like California, who's a good Pac-12 team, who's in the NIT, matching up as a 16 seed.
Yeah.
I think it was Texas Tech or somebody like that, who's not a great team in the Big 12, but they're all right. 15, 16 seed. I mean, it's cool to think outside the box, but I do think when you, and especially the more you see the George Masons, VCUs, Gonzagas of the world, Wichita State last year, it is cool to have those small guys in there. Plus, you know what's going to happen? One of these 14 or 15s or something is going to win.
It's
just going to happen.
We talked last week about this being the second biggest event in American sports.
Yeah.
It clearly isn't broke. It gets bigger every year, and don't fix it, like, type thing. And there's, like, part of all of that, like, Manhattan was all pissed off that they had to go, you know, and play
Louisville. Yeah.
Because, that, you know, obviously, that guy came out of Louisville, and the coach, was the coach from Manhattan?
Oh, Massiero or something?
Yeah, Massiero? Paisan guy from, you know. And so they're all pissed off, like, we were playing, like, a better, bigger version of us, you know what I mean, which they are. But that's cool.
Yeah, well,
that wouldn't happen. Like, you know, I think they did that on purpose. Like, I think that, you know, I like that. And it's not broke because it's so perfect because everybody tomorrow is going to be tuned to their phones, whether they're listening on their phones or their computers or TVs. So until it gets to a point where it gets stale, don't change it. I think it was, an idea that was kind of at least something. You don't get a lot of callers that call in with actual ideas that are, like, worth debating.
Right.
I just thought that was unique. It's like, if you really wanted to just solve it and have, like, end that issue, Vegas wouldn't mess this up.
No, they wouldn't. And, you know, in terms of just talking about Manhattan for a sec, who did they want to play?
I mean,
you won the MAC.
Manhattan wins the MAC, and they said they were just going to roll in and
you want to
play Milwaukee.
You want to move them to the East and they could play Michigan State?
Go ahead.
You want to move them, they could play a 3-seed like Duke or Syracuse? Or something. I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying, but they're all watching.
They're underseeded, but come on, get over yourself. Just be happy you're in. You won the MAC.
Do you think you're going to go? They had these, like, aspirations to go.
They wanted to play who? Like NC Central or something?
NC Central.
Doesn't work like that, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know. But, all right, well, you want to take a break or you want to keep rolling?
That's up to you.
Let's keep rolling.
Let's do it.
Where
are we going?
The sponsors, they'll be there for us. All right, where are we moving?
We're moving
to... We've taken out the East.
Let's go to the Midwest, because Tony D is a big Wichita State fan, apparently.
You know I love Wichita State, because they're so... All right,
what do you like about them? Seriously.
What I like about them is everything you've told me about them.
Yep.
You sat here and sold me on them.
Yes.
About, like, you know, their comparison with them in Syracuse that day on the show. So I've seen two games of theirs, bits and pieces of two games. And then I like the fact that this is a team that went to the Final Four last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, they have something to prove. And I have this just – I hate the fact that all of these people, like Frances, are like, it hurts a team that they're undefeated going into the tournament. So – part of my picking them to go to the finals, and I have them in the finals, is that it just – I want them to shut those people up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's almost like why I rooted for Peyton Manning, not because of anything else, but just to shut the stupid people up that are like, because he hasn't had so many rings, like these people that want to put a stamp on something, like, if you go undefeated, this is bad. Were they supposed to – I mean, they were in a conference they were going to roll over, And they won some good games, but they, you know, I don't understand that a loss just for the sake of being a loss means something. I hate that mentality.
You know,
so that's why I really, it's more than I'm just rooting for them, and that's just like a stupid way to pick a bracket pool, but it's like, I'm rooting against that mentality of these people that are like, oh, you got to lose a game.
I'll tell you what's funny. Indiana State was the second best team in the Missouri Valley Conference, Wichita's conference, right?
Yeah.
So Indiana State goes into Fayetteville, Arkansas last night against an Arkansas team that I thought, personally, they swept Kentucky. I mean, they played tight games with Florida. I thought they should have been in, but Indiana State goes there and gets pummeled, okay? Gets pummeled in Bud Walton Arena, right? So let's say Wichita had lost during the season to Indiana State. Everybody would be talking today going, where's Wichita going to go? They lost to Indiana State. So the fact that they lost to no one, and there's people out there, and I'm not going to kill on Frances. I mean, people know what I think about him, I guess. It's ridiculous. If they lost to them, if they lost to Drake,
like,
if they lost to
about.
Missouri State or whatever the hell they would have done, or Evansville, where they were down at halftime, and then they outscored them by like 20 or something. You know, you don't have to lose. The issue that I have here is you have an undefeated team.
Yeah.
And you put in their bracket here, okay, Louisville. All right. To me, it's like you have Louisville as a 4 seed. Michigan, I don't think is going anywhere. I have Duke going to the Final Four. I like everything about their team. I like Duke and Louisville in the Elite Eight, and I think it's almost borderline the worst matchup Wichita could hope for.
Yeah.
Because I've mentioned the Early, Van Vliet, Baker, Tequila Cotton inside for Wichita. I love all those guys. I just think Louisville just may be a little bit better.
Yeah.
As much as I like Wichita.
This idea that possibly the selection committee wanted to punish them a little bit.
I wouldn't put anything past them.
I wouldn't put it past them, but
nothing.
It seems like, I mean, they got to go through Louisville just to get to the Elite Eight. Like,
yeah, and you know the other thing I thought about? The 8-9 games, Kentucky and K-State, okay? You have a situation here where Kentucky is trending in all the right directions, playing great. It's a young team with a lot of guys that are, you know, maybe unknown commodities because you go, you know, how are the Harrison Twins going to play?
Yeah.
How is Julius Randle going to respond to the big stage and all these things? And then, you know what, if they lose and you draw K-State, because Wichita should be either one, Cal Poly or Texas Southern. Now you draw K-State, a team from your own state,
mm-hmm.
that probably, like most of the Jayhawk fans, are a little bit tired of hearing about Wichita Kansas, because it's been a Jayhawk state for the longest time. You draw two teams that are very, very dangerous.
I've seen K-State, they played that Kansas game.
Absolutely.
And watched the entire game.
Absolutely. When you could have, let's say, taken the 8-9 game from another bracket, like Colorado and Pitt.
Yeah.
Both teams are a lot less dangerous, in my opinion, than Kentucky and K-State. So they put a landmine in – it's stupid. I hate the way they word it now. It's round two. Okay, these playing games aren't around.
Yeah.
This is round two. If they draw Kentucky, K-State, which they're going to, you go, my God, and then you draw Louisville? I mean,
yeah, I know.
It's like you put – how many landmines did you want to put in one field for this team?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then if they, let's say they beat Louisville, now you got to go play Duke 2 days later, or whoever the hell comes out of the other side. I mean,
yeah.
it could be Michigan, it could be any one of these teams, but I do think...
Is UMass back at all? I mean, UMass, you know, they had that run, obviously, back in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah,
when we were
it's their first
up.
Time back.
Yeah, I know.
Since 98.
And so it's kind of exciting, being from the area.
Yeah.
I saw them play in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, was that Lou Rose team?
That was... Big Country was playing for, who did he play for?
Brian Reeves?
Yeah.
OK State.
OK State.
Yeah.
So I went to the Elite Eight game because we had a season package for the Nets.
Yeah.
And they played at the Brendan Byrne Arena back then.
Right.
And so we got some sort of package and I got to see a couple games there. But, so UMass played. And who did you say Big Country played for? Brian
Oklahoma
Reeves?
State.
Oak State, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was like exciting kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, UMass is here and then they were gone forever and now they're kind of back. I mean, are they for real? I mean, six seeds, they're higher seed than Connecticut. Are they a better team than Connecticut?
I was absolutely amazed by that. And you know what? I'm not one of these guys.
They're a better team than Providence?
By five.
Yeah.
They're a six seed.
I know, but are they a better team?
No, I don't think they're better than Providence.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Are they a better team than Providence? That much better that they get a six seed?
Yeah. The thing about it is, not only do they get a six seed, and I mentioned it earlier in the show, then they draw a play-in game between Iowa and Tennessee, which is going on tonight. And
yeah.
I go, I mean, how advantageous could you make it for UMass? I love Chaz Williams. He's a little firecracker point guard. He's kind of out of that although he's not stocky. He's got a like Khalid El-Amin type of point guard. He's really good, but I frankly think Tennessee or Iowa beats him. I have Iowa beating Tennessee, but I think either one of those teams beat
right?
him and might be favored.
That'd be great.
I mean, I think that's how out of hand the NCAA gets is you get...
I thought it was crazy, too.
Yeah, you get a couple of 11 seeds that, in my mind, are at least a point and a half, 2 points favored over you, and then how the hell are you seeded five spots higher than them?
And they got to play
yeah.
the privilege of playing...
and then whoever comes out of that game likely is going to draw Duke. Everybody's telling me about Mercer. Duke's going to beat Mercer by like 40 points.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
that's what I'm going to discuss.
They beat Seton Hall. Mercer did. They have this kid, Langston Hall, who's a good guard, who I saw play in the Atlantic Sun Conference Tournament. Duke's going to mollywop them, and Duke's going to beat the hell out of whatever one of these teams comes through. I think that's pretty much locked
in. So when you get down to your picks,
yeah,
are you telling me that either Kansas State or Kentucky's going to beat Wichita?
I think Wichita's
going to
win.
Going to the Sweet 16.
Yeah. I think Wichita's going to win. I'm just talking about, I don't want to sound like a crybaby. I'm not a Wichita fan, but it's unfair. It's unfair how many people you wanted to put in their way to get a chance to go to the Elite.
The only thing I'd say against that is, at this point for Wichita, their undefeated team, it's national championship or bust. Another Final Four appearance is against. So
my argument is they're not supposed to get the most
important. What does it really matter, though?
Well, I'm just saying. You're not supposed to give, and first of all, they don't get the number one overall seed. Fine. I agree that Florida is better than them, okay? So you give them the second overall seed. Look at their path.
Yeah, no,
that's all I'm saying. I mean, they could win the national championship, and I think it would be great for college basketball if you get one of these quote-unquote mid-majors to win it. I mean, I remember when Gonzaga was a one seed. I mean, it's not out of the question that these teams can make a run. Obviously, Wichita proved it last year as an 8 or 9 or whatever they were. I just think you put the toughest 8-9 bracket, followed by what's arguably going to be Louisville, who is way underseeded. Louisville should probably be a 2.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, at that point, they wouldn't meet them until the Elite 8.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. You give them Louisville, maybe the hottest team in the country in the round of 16. But even still, I think Duke wins the bracket. I like their team most of any team in this bracket. I think Jabari Parker is the best player in the whole field. And I think, like I said in my article, in years past, like when Duke lost to Lehigh, the three-point trail went cold, and they didn't have anybody to go to. When it happens now, they give the ball to Jabari Parker, and you can give him the ball on the block or the free throw line extended, three-point range, whatever it is, and he scores.
He's the most NBA-ready player.
I don't think there's any question he's a lot better than Wiggins right now. I think he's a lot better.
What's the big that's hurt for Kansas? I mean, is he
Embiid? I think Embiid would be the number one overall pick if he came out, but I think Parker's the best player right now.
So
he's
Rookie of the Year in the NBA next year.
I would say so. I mean, you have Wiggins, Randall at Kentucky. You have Gordon in Arizona. There's some very good freshmen out there. Marcus Smart, who's a sophomore, very good player.
He's going to go out.
He's going to go out. But I think Parker, just talking about this tournament, the best player in the field.
Yeah.
The biggest game changer. And there's a lot of good, great players. He's the best.
Yeah. All right, let's go out west quick.
Yep.
And then we're going to take a break, and we're going to get to a little say what in a minute. I can't wait to close the show out with that. But, all right, so go out west.
Who you got? Give me a little breakdown.
Well, you want me to break things down?
Break some things down.
Well, here's the thing with Arizona. I mean, Arizona, if you remember early in the year, I mean, this is a team that people – that was the team people were talking about running the table early on. They started out, 17-18-0, and then they ran some injuries.
Yep.
And people kind of, you know, forgot about them a little bit. But every time I turn on Arizona, they're out there winning games. So I still – I mean, clearly they deserve the one seed, and I think that they you know, they're going to advance to the Sweet 16. I mean, we don't need to go all the way out. But so, I mean, you know, Weber State, they're going to win that game. I took Oklahoma State over Gonzaga. I feel like the majority of people are going to go Gonzaga that are in my boat of, like, casual fans because Gonzaga is the team you're supposed to pick in these bracket pools. But, you know, Oklahoma State's a team that, you know, they had their trials and tribulations in the middle of the season. Still wound up with a 9 seed. I think, you know, before all that craziness happened where they went on that losing streak and they had all the craziness, they were a team that would have, you know, were on track to be a 3-4 seed. Didn't you get that sense?
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden they run into their, you know, 2-week, 3-week just hiatus from playing basketball.
Yeah.
And they were horrible. And that dropped them way down. Not similar to what Michigan State had happened, not to that, you know, to a much greater extent. So I really like Oklahoma State, you know, to obviously make a little run here. You know, I don't know. The rest of the conference, I'm a Creighton guy.
Right.
I've got Creighton coming out of this bracket.
To go to the Final Four?
I really do.
Well,
I think you get, you know, our boy McDermott, you don't like that.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think Creighton loses to Baylor in the second round.
Oh, fair enough.
Ooh, I really do. I
wow, we're putting it right. We'll be here next week. One of us is going to look very smart.
Yeah. You know what? There's a lot of people killing on Baylor, okay? I told a buddy of mine, I'm not looking for any credit because if you don't believe me, you don't believe me. I told a buddy of mine, I go, I think Baylor's going to win the Big 12 tournament. I think that's how good Baylor is, and they've struggled at so many different points this year. But when you look at the way Cherry's playing, you look at the way Jefferson's playing, and I'm telling you right now, if you watch their game against Nebraska, watch this kid, Brady Heslip. He's a kid out of Ontario. He literally does nothing but spot up for three-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
He can't handle the ball. He can barely defend, which is why they've gone to his own.
He's a J-popper.
Anywhere with an inch of room. And I just wonder, because I know everybody does their homework and everybody looks at film, I just wonder, as a Big 12 fan, if these other teams are going to know just how shifty he is. Because one game against Kansas, he dropped like 26 on 8 three-pointers or 7 three-pointers, whatever it was, and the next game he didn't score.
Yeah.
Because if you shut him down, you beat Baylor, pretty much,
yeah.
And with all the star players they have. But I like Baylor out of that quadrant, and this is the bracket, I think, that really falls apart in my mind. Because in the other quadrant, the Milwaukee quadrant, I like Oregon coming out of there. I have no respect for Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin and American are going to play the most boring basketball game you've ever seen. BYU with the injury to Kyle Collinsworth, that's a killer. He sets up everything for Tyler Hawes. And I've said in my article, I think whoever comes out of the San Diego pod between Arizona, Oklahoma State, and Gonzaga wins the bracket, wins this region. I just think they're the three most complete teams, even Oklahoma State without Michael Cobbins.
Mm-hmm.
Who's been out all year with a knee. He's a legit big guy, but Kamari Murphy's been playing really well for them. I just think I have on my sheet Oak State beating Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I think Oak State's another Big 12 team that's trending in all the right directions. They have scoring from everywhere when you look at guys like Nash and Markell Brown. They're well-coached. Arizona eventually at some point this year has to show some signs of Brandon Ashley's injury hurting them because he may be their best and most athletic player. He's out with an ACL. And then down in the Spokane regional down there, it's my upset pick for the whole thing, was North Dakota State over Oklahoma. I saw North Dakota State play in the Summit Championship. They're a patient, smart team that works for good shots. Oklahoma shoots the lights out of the ball, but they're never willing to pass it around and get the right shot. They'll give it to Cameron Clark, they'll give it to Buddy Hield, and they'll just say, you know what, just do something crazy. And I think those are the kinds of teams that can stumble, especially if they come in and go, you know, this is North Dakota State. Who cares? Let's just light these guys up.
Yeah.
They get a little bit cold.
That's
going to
be an exciting game.
I think it's going to be a really good game. That's my upset pick for the bracket. But I've got Oak State going through to the Final Four on my sheet. But I really do feel that between them, Gonzaga, and Arizona, whoever comes out of that San Diego regional goes straight through Sweet 16, Elite Eight, right to the Final Four.
Rolls right
yeah.
through.
All right. That's what I think.
That is an interesting bracket, I think.
I think it's the most interesting bracket.
Because you've got the one seed in Arizona that had, you know, was everybody's darling in the first few months and then fell apart with the injury. Not fell apart, but just, you know, everybody kind of lost faith in
the
them.
The 30-4.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here being critical.
Yeah. But you can't just replace guys that they
no.
lost. So so it is. It's one of those brackets where it's like, it's crazy. You could fill out this bracket as a guy like me. You could fill out this bracket 10 times. It might have 8 different scenarios
yeah.
how it works out because it's kind of crazy. I mean, I don't know anything about North Dakota State, but obviously you do. So give me your Final Four before we go to break.
I got Michigan State and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like Michigan State in that game. I think they got a little bit more toughness, although I think Florida might have a little bit more ability. And then on the other side, I got Duke and Oak State. I like Duke. I like Duke big. I'm not going to say they're going to beat it by a ton in a matchup like that, but I think they're a big favorite in a game like that because they have so many weapons. And then you got the Coach K factor.
Mm-hmm.
There's never a hair out of place on that guy's head. I mean, that team does things right. So I got Duke, Sparty, national championship. I like Duke by 4.
I went at this. I've told you, I used to be a very big college basketball fan.
Yeah.
Through middle school, high school, even through college because UConn was good when we were in college. And then since like 03, 04, I've really fallen off. So I'm going at this as like, I'm a gambler. I'm looking at it as just a straight gambler. And everybody's telling us that this is one of those things that anybody could win. And it's got, you know, you can't go chalk. So I went Final Four the exact opposite. Because
right.
if that's what people are telling me, I go the exact opposite. If something seems too good to be true, if it seems like, you know, this is not a team where this is not a year when the one seeds go on, and a lot of times the one seeds don't. You see
right.
Final Fours. So I've got a ton of one seeds in my Final Four. I've got Florida, Virginia. I got Creighton, Wichita State, and then I got Florida and Wichita State. For our bracket, I went Wichita State to win the whole thing, I'm rooting for them for the reasons I'm saying. So I did go chalk, but for that reason. I'm not going to pretend to be able to break down the things. I did it as take a step back, take a bird's eye view of things. Everybody is looking at it like you're looking at, where there's all these teams that are seated too low and this and that, and everybody loves Michigan State. Everybody loves Louisville. I mean, I see that final everywhere and all these experts, and I went it as, you know what? If everybody's picking that way, the only thing I know is that's not going to happen because
right.
all these experts, and they're never right.
Right.
So let me just go chalk and go with one seed getting down there. It doesn't happen, but if it's going to happen, it's going to happen this year when everybody's telling me it's not going to happen.
Are you going to be depressed when Virginia is gone by Sunday?
I am going to be depressed. My $1 billion. I'm sitting here
yeah.
counting my $1 billion.
Can I give you, seriously, the name of the tournament?
Yeah.
The coolest name?
Go ahead.
North Dakota State Bison. Marshall Bjorklund.
Marshall
Watch this kid.
Yeah?
Lights out. Reminds me of Tony D on the hoop down at Ben Franklin Middle School.
He's just killing it.
Yeah.
Slipping and sliding all over.
Just a shooter, ball
They cover
hammer.
That floor with, like, chalk or
yeah.
something. Just something that's sliding all around.
Yeah, it's an awful place.
Tony D will hit it from anywhere. All right, let's take a quick commercial break. Come back. We'll give you some Say What with the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me the doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're done.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, Really Bad Dancer.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out as always, tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, or on Twitter @tristate_sports. Tony D, we got some Say What coming up.
Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker.
Well, oh, that time I thought he was going to say it.
All right, how about this?
All right, go ahead.
This is not really a, you know, this is an Italian baseball team doing a major league spoof.
Oh, boy.
But there's one little problem there.
I see it.
I think that's an Italian in the front.
Is that Al Jolson?
Little blackface going on.
That is that would not fly in America, I'll tell you that right now. Because I was going to say, it's darker than the tuxedos, whatever they're wearing in the background.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, that is something that would not fly in America.
I'm going to have to talk to Jeroma and see what, what's his, croquetta? Is that a place in Italy?
I'm sure it is, I don't know. There's a lot of weird, I mean, the Italian Baseball League is a great place to go. We played, my college team played a tournament there. Like, we just went, it was not a tournament, it was like we went and played a bunch of their professional teams. And I said on the air, like, I got offered a contract to play there. This is the God's honest truth. It was the baseball club of Godo, which I don't even know where Godo, Italy is.
No.
But I saved the email just so I would always have it, so I could say, well, at least I got offered. They offered me $1,500 American a month and a job waiting tables.
Yeah.
Because you only play like 3 or 4 games a week. So they also hook you up with a job.
That's great.
I mean, I thought I would kill it there.
I think this is actually Jerome's old team.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Parma. I got to ask him now.
We got to check this out.
You know,
I mean,
I've seen some of the stuff. I'm not a big soccer guy, but I've seen some of the things that they do to black players in the professional soccer
league. Oh, what's the guy's name? What's the black guy's
name?
He's an Italian guy.
He's got the mohawk and everything.
Bellinelli or something?
Bellinelli might be it, but they were talking about how they never had their civil rights movement in Italy.
Oh, no.
So, pretty much the whole of Europe hasn't. So, we look, ahead of the time.
All of a sudden,
you couldn't get away with that here, like you said.
Who's got the Westboro Baptist Church? We're ahead of the times.
Yeah, God rest that guy's soul, huh?
Oh yeah,
he's
boy,
a good guy.
He just got introduced to a little man named Satan.
Yeah.
Like, whoa! I didn't expect to go south here, but I did because I'm a horrible human being.
How about, here's a shocker for you, Andrew Bynum is hurt again.
No.
He's actually like looking like he could give some significant minutes.
He's hurt. He had to get his knee drained. He's got some kind of back problem.
This guy hasn't played basketball in a very long time. He just goes out there and gets hurt.
I don't even like watching him play when he plays. That's how much he upsets me.
Yeah, he's...
There's no effort there, Mike. And if you tell me there is, when you got Andre Blatch on your team, and you're going to tell me this kid's effort,
You want me to show you what an honest guy I am?
Please.
Because you think I'm like a guy who's like a cocky guy. And I don't admit when I'm wrong. We had we used to do top tens every week on the show. Long before you got here, we did one. We're back at the Cable Ready Studios. We did top 10 basketball players that went from high school straight to the pros.
Yeah.
And I put Andrew Bynum ahead of Tony D's boy, Sean Kemp, because I didn't consider Sean Kemp going straight because he did go to college. He's never played because he got kicked out right away. And I was like, Andrew Bynum is a legitimate double-double guy. I was here on my pedestal telling you how great Andrew Bynum is. I don't think he's scored a bucket. That's God's honest. We got to pull that tape. I was sitting here telling you Andrew Bynum was on his way to freaking Springfield.
Tony. Come on, go ahead, upset me.
So, Obama does his bracket every year. So, this year's pick, he has Michigan State over Louisville.
Which is what ESPN says.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Everybody picked it. But, obviously, he does this every year. What do you think about him doing these brackets every year? You think it's a big deal? I think it's blown out of proportion? Because people get on him about it.
I think it's ridiculous to get on him about it.
Bill O'Reilly.
What's silly is, you get these, and I told you, I gave up for Lent. I gave up debating politics. So I'm not even talking about, like, politics. But I will tell you this. I mean, Richard Nixon went on laughing. What's his name? Ronald Reagan was, like, on a cruise ship with Bob Hope. Doing jokes and all this stuff. So all of a sudden now that Barack Obama is doing, you know, talk shows with Zach Galifianakis and doing bracket pools, that's supposed to be like this big thing. Like, he should be out there fighting Ukraine, you know, getting into Ukraine. It's like, he can give us 5 minutes to do something like this.
I actually study college hoops, and it took me 5 minutes to fill out my bracket. This man has way more on his plate than I do. So what did it take him, 8 seconds to fill this thing out?
He did it on the crapper. I guarantee
you. I don't blame him.
He did it on his iPhone.
Didn't LBJ used to have meetings right on the crapper? He'd call people right in. Come on, I'm thinking of...
Right on the throne.
Yeah, boy.
He didn't care.
You love those Texans. You got to love them.
Oh, well, yeah.
How about this? Brandon Spikes and Akeem Tlaib, former Patriots, today, you know, they're no longer there. So they are now telling everybody what, you know, telling the world everybody already kind of knew that the Patriots put out fake injury reports.
No.
Yeah, now they're saying that.
Tom Brady's been on the injury report for 11 years. He's never missed a game other than the season is up.
I guess they're saying that Brandon Spikes, he got put on the IR last year for supposedly because he was injured, but it was really because he came late to a practice. So instead of, you know.
That's a major league violation, by the way.
Bill Belichick is like the Wizard of Oz. He's like behind this curtain giving out orders and stuff.
Just not winning
just
Super Bowls
weird.
Every year.
Yeah.
Making the playoffs, not winning Super Bowls for the last decade.
He loves to play the Giants, though. He's good against them. Tony, I see golf.
Tiger Woods.
Oh, boy. He got the red shirt on. He ain't going to be wearing it this weekend.
Tiger Woods, banged up. I mean, is this guy ever going to get back to... I mean, obviously...
I actually thought of you today because they were talking... I mean, obviously Scott Van Pelt's a big golf guy, and I was listening to his show. I like his show a lot. And they were talking about it and how he bowed out of this weekend's tournament already today with some back spasms and what will he be ready? And even if he's ready, will it have hurt him that he's not playing in all these tournaments leading up to it? So my question is, like, a guy like Tiger Woods, let me get your overall thoughts of Tiger Woods. I mean, I know you're a huge golf fan.
Yeah.
He's got to be. He's not a guy. I know you hate steroid guys, but you're not a guy that's like, I'm anti-Tiger Woods.
I'm a huge Tiger Woods fan. I love Tiger Woods because it's such an elitist game. And here's a guy who grew up with a military dad, playing public links courses, not some like country club snob.
So you're like a Venus and Serena fan.
I love the Williams sisters. And I think he is the greatest thing that has ever happened to golf. And I've had arguments with people
I
say Palmer and Nicklaus. And, no, here's a black man with an Asian mom, comes along from modest means to make himself into this. And, his off-the-course stuff, I get people disliking him.
Well, he's a horrible guy.
Well, I mean, but that's fine. I'm sure there's a lot of guys we like.
I assume they're all.
But I'll tell you what's troubling about this is he's missing the Bay Hill this week, which is Arnold Palmer's tournament.
Is the one where
you
win a sword or something?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of his favorite non-majors to play in. And the fact that he's this banged up and he's mentioning, which he's never done before, that he might not be ready for Augusta, where he's won four times, is frightening to me. And it's got to frighten the people at the PGA who seem to hate him. Yeah. But when he doesn't play,
they lose a
go
lot
look
of
up the TV ratings when he doesn't play.
Well, and the thing is, for the last few weeks or, the last few tournaments, he's bowed out early and everybody's making it like he's just using an excuse because he wasn't playing
right.
Well. Nobody is, taking this guy seriously because of all the stuff he had off the course.
Yeah.
Then now it's like he's just a crybaby who doesn't – and that's, exactly the opposite of what
he won five times.
Remember when he was, limping up the course at one major?
The 2008 U.S. Open
that's
when he beat Mediate in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he was on one leg.
No.
He was, getting wheelchaired up the thing. So my question to you overall is, say he doesn't play until the Masters.
Right.
Can he – is that something that, to me, it's like you could still drop him in the Masters, and he's still going to be a
absolutely.
Guy to put money on.
At the Masters, I think so, because it's a course he knows. The
that would be the
majors,
best thing that could happen to the PGA. If he doesn't play leading up to it and goes there and is, in contention going into
yeah.
Saturday, you're talking about ratings, because
yeah.
you can't make a Tiger Woods story be the underdog story. That would make him
yeah.
the underdog story.
Well, just to put a bow on it, and then we'll go to the next one. I mean, I've argued since 2008, really, with all his injuries, his off-the-course stuff. He switched over to Sean Foley as his coach. I think he needs to get rid of Foley as his coach, go back to hitting the draw that he always hit, and I think he needs to play more. I think the biggest problem he has is he's getting older. He's pushing 40 in a couple of years, and I think he doesn't play enough. I don't think he plays less than Mickelson, who plays a very select schedule. I think he needs to play more. I think he's at that age now where his otherworldly abilities just don't kick in just automatically now.
Before we go on, here's a question I have. Because he was always a very clutch putter.
Yeah.
And I've heard from golf experts that putting is the first thing that goes, which just makes no sense to me. Just logically. I don't play –
But you get the yips.
I'm a knock-around, 9,500 golfer, so I don't know anything about it. But why would you would think putting would be the last thing that goes?
Well, I think the problem Tiger's having is Tiger doesn't hit the ball as close as he used to. Ben Hogan said, if you want to be a better putter, hit it closer.
Yeah.
And he doesn't stick him in there anymore
like he used to. Yeah, right. So now he's got 18
footers. He's got 18 footers, and he has him at Augusta,
footers.
Where he knows the greens. Maybe the only guy who knows him better is Nicholas. He knows the greens inside and out, and he puts like a clown when he's there now. And it's upsetting to me because I love to root for him. I love rooting for the guy. I love watching him play. I love everything he stands for in terms of the anti-establishment, elitist golf scene. And it's just upsetting. Now, let's go to Tony, who's got a picture of Jim Morrow.
Which is a great picture. Competition committee met today, and they're going to talk about, and for the NFL, they're going to talk about expanding the playoffs. Playoffs?
I love that.
You guys think that's a good idea?
Maybe the Vikes could get in. Maybe the Jets will play more, huh?
Hey, look, when I first heard this, expanding it, I was like, this is stupid. But then I'm like, who cares?
Yeah.
I just think it's good for it.
Well,
I don't think it's like when I first heard it, I'm like, this is just a money grab thing, which it clearly is.
Yeah.
But again, who cares?
I'll tell you the thing I love about the NHL is 16 teams get in out of 30, and the reason I love it is because you're playing 7 games. I know football is a different sport entirely, but you're playing 7 games. Okay, you got to win 4 of them, so it tends to weed out some of that stuff. In football, you take a Vikings team. That stinks. They could beat the Niners on a weird day.
That's the only thing I don't
like about a one-and-done deal like that is you get in now some of the watered-down talent teams with less talent, and they could knock off a really good team.
Well,
and I don't like
everybody complained about the Seahawks a few years ago won the division at 7-9.
And they beat
the
Saints.
And they went out and beat the Saints, who were world beaters. To me, isn't that what sports is all about, though? That's why we watch it.
It's not about the best
team winning all the time.
Well, unless it's my team winning,
yeah,
which it rarely
right.
is. But the
maybe
thing,
I'm talking like a Jet fan.
Yeah, I like identifying
with
the best team.
A Jets fan, a Bills fan, and a Vikings fan loves this idea.
Oh,
I mean, we're all about it.
There's no question
about
that.
Try to say sports guys endorse this idea. Neil's not here, who's a big Giants fan. He's like, that's a stupid idea.
I'm going to say this. I can see Tony's computer screen right now. I already disagree with it.
All right. Tony, what do you got next, brother?
Mike Woodson. coach of the Knicks, says that he knows he can teach a triangle offense. Let me ask you a question. Does any other team run a triangle offense in the NBA?
Not that I know of. I don't know any teams that run it in college.
So,
he knows. So why don't you just go tackle that over the last few years there, Mikey?
Yeah. He doesn't even know if he's going to have a
I
job.
I think
yeah.
that this entire situation here in New York is just getting worse. This Phil Jackson situation, it just makes zero sense to me. This idea. So, first of all, now you got Carmelo Anthony, who I still think is going to leave. But he comes out publicly like, oh, I'll listen to Phil Jackson. You are Donnie Walsh, who's one of the most respected GMs in basketball minds, and all of basketball was there a couple years ago. You don't want to listen to him.
No.
And basically, he got run out of town. People want to say that he left because he was old and he was kind of incapacitated a little bit. That's not the case, because Dolan was on the radio a couple days ago and said we had differences in the mind. So all of a sudden now, Phil Jackson's going to come in. You're going to change the way you play, the way you played since you were 10 years old or whatever you've been playing. You're going to change the way you play. Mike Woodson wants to all of a sudden change the way he runs the offense, and they think that they're going to get these he's going to use some sort of Jedi mind tricks to get these big free agents to come in there and play with him. To me, it's insane. It's just like Phil Jackson saying, you want to give me $60 million to sit here and be really boring in interviews, and I'll do that. Because he was ridiculously boring over the last 2 days. I couldn't listen to sports talk radio.
Yeah, number one, there's a lot of people that say Phil Jackson can't teach the triangle offense, that it's actually Tex Winters, the assistant he had with him for all those years, that if you remember, he was a little chubby-faced white guy with the gray hair who sat behind the Lakers and Bulls benches, who was the guy who created this whole thing. So I don't even know if Phil could teach it. I don't mind Phil coming in, because the only thing I'm arguing, I don't know how it's going to turn out, is one thing Phil knows is basketball.
Yeah,
you're not bringing in a guy who's a hockey coach to run the Knicks. So he understands basketball. He's coached legendary players. I think he has an eye for talent. I mean, you look at the parts that were brought in around those Lakers and Bulls teams, the peripheral parts were all good parts. But I don't buy this for a second that Mike Woodson, who I do like and have respect for, can teach this offense, because from what I understand, it's very, very involved, and it involves someone who has a lot of experience in running it. So I don't know. I mean, can an option football coach teach to run and shoot just because he knows football?
Yeah.
Mike Woodson knows basketball. He's got a terrible team.
I know the triple option.
Yeah.
I can't teach
that. That's what I'm saying. I mean, Mike Woodson knows more about basketball than we know about probably any sport we follow. You know what I mean? And I don't think he could do it. I'm not saying me and you and Tony could do it either. I'm just saying.
Plus, it's like the idea that, like, so you're basically saying the idea that he's got this great eye for talent. That could be helpful for, like, the periphery guys. Instead of bringing in Andrea Bergnani, you're going to bring in...
You think he would have brought in Carmelo? You think Phil would have brought in Carmelo, made that trade? I don't.
I don't
think
either.
Donnie Walsh would have made it if Dolan didn't tell him he wanted it done.
Well, exactly.
I don't even blame Walsh.
Yeah.
I know you don't blame
Walsh. So now all of a sudden, Dolan's going to take a step back from Phil Jackson. He's going to take a step back for Donnie Walsh.
Yeah, well, maybe he's learning the errors of his ways. I don't know. I have no faith in Dolan, so I'm not defending him. But maybe he's, you know, maybe
I think
he's
the
learning
whole
it.
Thing is just it's making it worse.
You think so?
I'm gonna write an article.
I think it gives Knicks fans a little bit of hope.
That's all it does.
That's all I'm saying.
You know what it's like when my little 8 month old is like crying and just can't. I just jiggle my keys.
Yeah.
And she stops crying. That's all. The Knicks fans were going to, remember, they were going to protest the game. We're not going to go to the game. And all Donnie Walsh, all Jim Dolan did was just jiggle the keys a little bit. Oh, we got this guy.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
I don't,
whatever. I'll come pay $300 to sit fucking, you know.
I'm not going to say that it's not going to be a nightmare or a debacle. All I'm saying is I'm not going to make the argument that Phil Jackson doesn't understand basketball.
Oh, no,
I know you're not making it, but there are people saying, like, what the hell is he going to do here? Like, he's a basketball guy. You're not bringing in some dentist and telling him to run the Knicks.
I think it's a great bet.
You know what I mean?
Guy.
So we'll see what he does.
He's been like just sitting there just scouring over tape.
No,
but
$60 million is great, though.
Yeah. He's not even going to be in New York.
I know.
Go ahead, Tom. What do we got? We got
last
a minute left.
Here. Wrap it up. Your boy, Mike Vick, is the Jets this weekend.
Sign him. I got Jets fans like, why come we're not spending this money? You know what I mean? And I think they should have gone out and got Rogers Cromartie. They do need a corner, obviously, because Miller stinks and Kyle Wilson stinks. But they do need that. But I think they got to save some money to give the extension to Mo Wilkerson because he's a stud. And I think they got to bring in Mike Vick. I think it's a perfect fit. Perfect.
I agree with you.
I sat here the other day talking about it.
But what I can't wait for is if they do bring him in, we'll listen to Indy all football season.
Oh, boy. That's
just gets banged up and can't play.
And then we got Gino.
Killing more
then
dogs.
Then we're back where we were anyway.
He goes there. You think he starts?
Oh, I think Mike Vick starts. If he comes there, he's going to start.
Yeah.
Gives them eight games. And then they got, then Gino, please figure out how to play quarterback.
Yeah.
You throw the ball a mile, but you throw it at people's feet. All right, we're Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out, tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, or on Twitter @tristate_sports. We're going to keep our college basketball theme going. We're going to get a couple guests next week along those lines. Go UConn.
Yes, sir.
Go Kansas.
I saw Jayhawk. Am I allowed
go
to root
North
for him?
Go North Dakota State.
Am I allowed to root for him?
Well, I'm going to let you root
for
him.
Okay, I will.
All right. Check us out next week, Wednesday, 8 o'clock. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys.